No, I'm going to say just one is going to go to the first.
Thank you very much. I think we are ready now to begin. I think I still need to welcome all you members and so this meeting today. We have, of course, invited all the affected portfolio committees to attend this particular meeting as we promised in our last briefing. Also, is that indicated as well that some other portfolio committees may not be able to attend the meeting, all of them, and then but if they send a representative, we will welcome that, because we wouldn't like to create a situation where other portfolio committees abandon their own work and assist us in our work. And, but we need their input, we need their presence, as long as it is arranged in a manner that what happens here, there's somebody that goes and communicate the other side what has happened and collect the documentation and the presentation across, then it will assist us so that at any time that any portfolio committee affected can give some input, we will really welcome that and hear from them how they see the things that we are dealing with. Honorable members, today our main job is to hold public hearings, and we have arranged that we will hear consultants and how. Initially we wanted also to have Busa, but for some reason Busa is not available, and also causes that we have asked the content advisor to really look at all other submissions that have been made, to really make some sort of an analysis of all of those, and then we will speak to those when the content advisor presents it. And those that have actually made those submissions, if they are present today, and we would like, if it is possible, just to indicate to the committee secretary about their presence, so that when we engage the document of the content advice, if there is a need for them to respond or to give some further clarity, then we should be able to call upon them to actually respond to those questions and issues that members may raise. Even though that they may not have had a verbal presentation. I think that is the main aim of today. But honorable members, you will remember that when we received the briefing, then we became aware that there were still a few sticking points between Home Affairs and SARS, of course, to say Home Affairs and Treasure, and then Home Affairs and SARS, and then we made it very clear that we will require them to go and talk to this matter among themselves, because we can't have a cabinet that agrees on a bill and send the bill to parliament. Then the administrations then have contradictions. When you expect that they are the chief advisors of the political head, if the political head agrees, then we take for granted that they have been also advised by their chief advisor. But then we pick up this specific point, then we requested that Home Affairs must be able to speak to Treasury, speak to the police and vice versa, to try and make progress on some sort of consensus on the matters that are in front of us. Now, and we said that should be done before the 13th of September and start public hearing. And we indicated very clearly that today we will ask to hear progress on those matters, whether they have made some progress. Hence, that's why we are putting in that first item. That's where we are going to start. And here. And we are aware, of course, as well, that cabinet has had discussions. Probably they pick up as well, even our discussions in the committee. And then they did reiterate the same thing and mandate a discussion on those specific matters to make sure that they have progress. And hence, of course, is that Home Affairs is here as the lead department, and then we'll hear as well from the police if there is anything that they want to say, and Treasury if there is anything that they want to say in terms of progress made in relation to those particular matters that we have requested them to go and sort out. I think that was actually becoming part of the welcome that we are trying to do. And then, of course, is that the representation in this meeting may have changed, then it is advisable that I request the honorable members to introduce themselves quickly before we actually get issues of our committees and our delegations. I'll start from my side in front, then I'll go through on my right hand side, the honorable head. Ms. Lenis Machid, and then the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs.
Monday report. My name is Tando Ekeni, member of the Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs. Thank you.
Good morning, members. My name is Archibald Figlin, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning to everyone. I'm Noka Yamunisi, a member of the Portfolio Committee of both Home Affairs and Defense.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Tejas Kosano, a member of State Secretariat in the Whip of the Committee of Defense.
Good morning, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ulisi Lesefago, a member of the Kansas Police.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and esteemed ladies and gentlemen, and Honorable Minister. This is Don Kumeli, member of Home Affairs Committee and Indonesia.
Good morning, Hanif Hussein, member of the Home Affairs Portfolio Division.
Good morning, my name is Kenny Westbrook, I'm a member of Home Affairs.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Doug Spiller, I'm a member of the JCI.
Good morning, my name is Ingrid Schmidt, member of the JCI.
Good morning, I'm Herman Kumar, member of the JCI.
Good morning, San Bonan, Tumdan Kamete, Idumale Committee, Les of Sugar. Friends.
Okay, now. So thank you very much. I think that was the last member, although the real last member is the minister himself, and Madhus Kitala is with us, and I think we appreciate his presence today to actually assist us as the lead department in this water management authority bill. And we really appreciate, Minister, your presence, and also the presence of the DG. CPA as well, and then I think that showed the level of respect for the committee dealing with this particular matter that is hiding in the department. And I think those members that are both members of the Home Affairs and Intelligence, or Home Affairs and Defense, and then they should just simply clear their minds how they're representing them, those portfolio committees at the same time, because when you speak, when there's time to raise a point to discuss, we should be clear with whether raising it as intelligence, otherwise there may be confusion. And but that is just on a lighter note. Thank you very much, honorable members. I think also we welcome those that are coming from our offices and support staff that are here, and then to really assist us, and those that are coming from the media, and then with you as well, and then those that are coming to do the presentation as well. You are welcome to this meeting to participate fully. Honorable members, from Home Affairs, we have got a delegation led by the Minister, Malu Sigigara, and then the DG, Kusele Aple. I can guess more or less now, you are almost a famous DG around. Yeah, no, it's the only DG that really works with everybody, from a child even born until somebody dead. Then that's the DG that works with almost more than 52 million people. And then we've got Everyday Africa, the DMA project manager, and then we've got Advocate Erasmus, Chief Legal Services. Then we've got Advocate Sibila Major, then the Director for Legal Drafting. We do have Sam Mandwan, as usual. Then from the police, we have Lieutenant General Mademola, which is the Deputy National Commissioner here on policing. Then we've got Lieutenant General Zuma, the Provincial Commissioner from Mpumalanga. That's where I come from. Then we've got Major General Chalembe, Head for Border. Then Brigadier Van der Walt for Legal Services is here. And then from National Treasury, we have Utsmail Mamonia. This name also is becoming really famous of late. And then you have got Zanga Mfuda. I think the one that was writing then must improve on the handwriting. Okay. And then we've got George Hembo from National Treasury. And then from Kosazu Stoknehau. And then we've got Matthew Pass from Kosazu. And then we've got Hango Tenge from Nehau. That are coming to SID as speak to us. And if there is anybody that I have missed, Speak Law Advisor. Then we've got Advocate Van Aschwerken, the Senior State Law Advisor. Then we've got Advocate Naidu, the Principal Law Advisor. Then from the Parliamentary Legal Service, then we've got Ms. Isaac. Then we've got apologies that we've received on members that may not be with us today. It's Dr. Melder, is not here today. Then Ms. Nkomo, is not here for Home Affairs. And then Ms. It should be Mr. Ness. He has not changed his sexual orientation. Yes, she's for Home Affairs as well. Then we have got Holomisa. I'm so glad to welcome from defense. He has apologized. And then we have got Ms. Rafiki, possibility of late arrival. And those are the apologies that we have received and the list of delegations that we have received. Honorable members, I think on that score, I would like to request the Minister of Home Affairs, assisted by the DG, to actually speak on the matters that we requested some sort of engagement and possible resolution to those particular matters, and then to really take us to confidence. Thank you very much. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, colleagues, comrades, honorable members. We appreciate the opportunity to make this presentation, Chairperson, on the issues that were raised during the previous meeting. I think to foreground the discussion, one must highlight that in June 2013, the cabinet resolved to establish the Airport Management Agency. And as part of that, the Department of Home Affairs was agreed to as the lead agent in that regard. In 2014, we made a presentation to cabinet with regard to the case study, an extensive case study conducted by GCAC on our behalf, which is an agency of the National Treasury, which had also conducted a socio-economic impact assessment. Cabinet had agreed that the guiding principles for the Data Management Agency should involve A, that the BMA should be responsible and accountable for the entire data environment. B, that its role should be to ensure coordination, collaboration, oversight, control, and effective management. And C, that the establishment of the BMA can be achieved through integrated systems and cooperation within an appropriate legal framework that specifies roles and responsibilities. So from the outset, the view of cabinet was that the Data Management Agency would be an integrated agency that would take control of, as it said, of the entire data management. The socio-economic impact assessment had noted that one of the difficulties with our data environment was that it was fragmented, and all the agencies that were operating in the data environment had their different establishing legislation, mandating legislation, and therefore the kind of big structures were themselves fragmented, the mandates were fragmented, the vision was fragmented, and there was no single agent amongst equals that could exercise the role of integrating the different mandates. It is necessary to emphasize that so that we understand quite clearly what was the premise from which cabinet moved and the basis on which it made the decision that this should be an integrated border management agency, and that therefore all the other departments and agencies operating the border environment would have to fit their responsibilities to the BMA. There were several issues that were considered, amongst others, in the course of the discussions, with regard to the responsibility of the National Defense Force to secure South Africa's national integrity, which is the constitutional mandate of the National Defense Force. Cabinet agreed that that function remains the mandate of the National Defense Force as it is constitutional, but that managing the borderline becomes the responsibility of the BMA. With regard to the functions of customs, Cabinet was of the view that the custom sanction must move into the PMA. A concern was raised by colleagues in the National Treasury, to which concern related to what they stated as splitting or breaking up or fragmenting the mandate of SARS. And there were two views expressed in that regard. One, that the mandate of SARS was established by cabinet and it can be reviewed by cabinet. And secondly, that the Department of Home Affairs indicated that no, it did not their intention to take over the revenue collection, which is the fundamental, which is the principal mandate of staff, that they are told and what they are keen on is to oversee those functions of customs as relating to the personnel on the ground, and that whatever revenue is collected to be sent directly into the customs office. So, with regard to the police, it was agreed that managing the other line as well as the process engine becomes the responsibility of the agency. But the police had no restrictions in the far as the enforcement of law and order in whatever environment, and obviously because of the nature of the PMA, they would be able to cooperate with the police should they find themselves in a situation where there is a criminal activity taking place either along the borderline or at a port of entry. So, the cabinet then adopted those views and agreed that this should be the basis for moving forward. We then, after that, received requests from colleagues from SARS for a conversation, from National Treasury, and from particularly organized business in the form of MISA specifically, and the organized labor in the form of COSAT, which meetings in regards to COSATU were attended directly by the General Secretary of COSATU, conversationally with the leadership of NEHAU, the General Secretary of NEHAU, and other leaders, negotiators of NEHAU, where about 5 items were identified as constituting subjects for discussion. The cabinet agreed to was that subsequently a presentation was made to cabinet by the Department of Home Affairs requesting that the DACC keep itself now be transferred from SARS to Home Affairs as part of the transitional mechanism, and that the staff that were from SARS should also be extended to Home Affairs. Cabinet agreed to that, and upon such agreement, an MOU was signed with SARS, and those members of staff were transferred, were extended to the MBA project office, and started work. So, I am providing this as a background so that I can move without wasting time, because I know a lot has been presented about bill itself, so that I can move speedily into the issues which are apparently matters of discord. Let me say, the issues that I have presented with regards to the cabinet decisions are cabinet decisions. And there will be no minister or department or agency in government which has an autonomous right to step out of cabinet decisions and speak out of turn with a cabinet decision. It was affirmed by the cabinet meeting last week, the statement of which was read by Minister Hadebe, the Minister in the Presidency, to the extent that he outlines the EMA in process and wanted that to indicate that this bill was adopted by cabinet in 2016, presented to make local consultations between November 2016 and May 2016, and that the final network report on the BMA bill was approved by the Market Management Committee, certified by the Office of the Chief Media Advisor for Introduction into Parliament, and that the treatment was introduced on the 26th May this year in Parliament, and the sector deliberation took place in the Portfolio Committee on the 5th of August. The cabinet approved that the Department of Home Affairs and SASH, National Treasury, must structure the finalization of the MAU relating to the settlement of relevant tax debt to DHA, to support current border management and coordination efforts in the border environment. So the cabinet reaffirmed effectively its own decisions on the BMA bill, but noted what was presented as ongoing discussions to finalize certain unintended consequences between the Minister of Home Affairs and the Minister of Finance, as well as the Minister of Home Affairs and the Minister of Police. Now, with regard to those, we have had consultations between the DG and the acting commissioner of the police services, which has resulted in a joint memorandum by the two. If I may quote, that when we circulate the summary of the meeting right between the DG and the acting national commissioner, affirming that the BMA will deal with border enforcement functions pertaining to the movement of people and goods as envisaged in the bill, and that subject to the attack, classical policing will be a concurrent function between the BMA and the SAT between process entry and border law enforcement areas. Both of them agree that the EMA will assume primary responsibility for border law enforcement, and therefore that there is nothing unconstitutional in the establishment of the BMA in relation to its functions. So the issues with the police are resolved. With regard to national treasury, there have been communal discussions that subsequent meetings were cancelled and so could not proceed to conclusion. The view of the department, as was presented in cabinet, remains that the Department of Home Affairs has no intention to take over to have the recollection at the court of Elsie that there is no, we have also a cabinet decision, that there is no department which has a right to exempt itself from the year 8 year and the guiding principles for the establishment. And so the personnel, the customs personnel at the border area will have to be transferred to the DMA. And that an arrangement must be entered in between two organizations with regards to the transfer of revenue into the coffers of the of SARS. So that is the situation at the moment. So we are not able as yet to present any complete signed document between the two departments other than what Home Affairs has presented, which was supported as reviewed by Cabinet. But in the course of the presenting the bill, we then undertook two parallel processes. One was to present the bill at Network for consultations between English government and labor, and secondly to negotiate directly with the different agencies, the Union, COSATU, as well as Busa, representing of the non-business. So, the first consultations, we from our understanding that we had ironed out the issues of control with business, that in regards to the unions, there were such issues which were placed for our consideration that we discussed. I was actually a bit amused when I read the statement that the department is in transition, because we had actually both compromised, both the union and ourselves, on a number of things. We had agreed to compromise. There was basically one issue which remained, in our opinion, a bit thorny, and that related to the establishment of the agency as a public entity. The union has raised a number of issues which related to the proclamation of DMA as an essential service, issues relating to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, as about everything which was the establishment of a public entity. They raised issues relating to security, voting, and other issues. In our discussions, we proposed that instead, because the socio-economic impact assessment has considered the action of establishing the DMA as a department in government, and took the view that insofar as the DMA has a specific function which does not narrowly align with its English department, we establish it as a public entity. And in our own discussions with COSAT, we propose one as instead of calling it then an agency, we call it an authority. It functions in pretty much the same way as you have the Department of Police. In this case, you would have the Department of Home Affairs. Then you have the police services, your commission officers, and then in our case, you would have your border, your air, and your maritime patrols, your commission officers. But the same principle would apply. But we must further to say that with regards to the concern which has been raised that you are splitting union membership. That we propose that both of that community, collective bargaining in society, DNA is concerned, will not happen outside the public service chamber. That it will still happen within the public service chamber, in which case, you then don't split membership of the union, and then split the union itself or weaken it. The discussion did center around issues of program by establishing an agency in that form. We are in actual fact addressing only remuneration issues. And my view was that no. Even in the guiding principles of the establishment of the DNA, issues of remuneration are not in raised. The issue that is being raised that is fundamental is the integration of water management. Effective water management. In line with the principles in the international migration that are outlined trying to streamline and better manage our migration processes. And so we are of the view that the concerns around these areas, whether it's about the remuneration, the speaking of union membership, those concerns are addressed, and even the issues of collective effort, the issues of not collective bargaining, social services, the right to strike, the trade that address, and the suggestion was that we must not move out of the legislative framework which already exists. That instead of declaring the entire UNA as an essential service, we approach the chamber and propose that the commission services be declared an essential service instead of even the administrative staff of the DNA. And that's what we agreed to. We said the time. We don't need to put it in the legislation. We suggest the legislation will be guided by existing legislation which applies to the police and to other departments and other commissioned officers. The issue that has raised with regard to security vetting, we took this view because both data and business were saying the security vetting process across government institutions is ineffective and inefficient. Yes, there are difficulties in that regard. I guess that that's why the cabinet on the 1st of August noted the concerns in relation to lack of capacity of the state security agents to deal with security clearance and vetting processes timelessly, and proposed that we be bound to ensure that this can be dealt with. Because, naturally, because of the sensitivity of the functions of water management in the direction that we are taking, and even if you are proclaimed to the department, we still need to ensure that the officers are vetted. But we do think that all the main suspicious concerns raised by later are addressed in the revised bill. Because the revised bill has taken into consideration the issues that pertain to the network that was discussed, the concessions that were made in the first. Which, for example, amongst others, you would realize we're not going to refer to the border management agency, we refer to the border management authority. And we carried out a number of things and streamlined them better, we articulated the legislation better than the draft was articulated. And so it seems that the security vetting processes are an absolute necessity for all future DNA officials and employees, because of the sensitivity and the need of the work they do. So, after extending the preparation of the network, there are three sustainable areas. with the settlement which couldn't be resolved. The animal has been provided to the establishment of the authority, secondly the security person, process, third the routine searches. It is our view, therefore, that there hasn't been any intransigence on any Buddhist part, that we have negotiated in different procedures where it was necessary. In that every party to the discussions has made confessions. It therefore also surprised us when we heard that Lisa has again raised concerns with regard to what they framed as basically with regard to issues relating to customs, which is a language which we have heard from the sister department to the language. Because we had these issues have been dealt with. I think concerns about uncertainty caused by an establishment of a new agency. We apply to basically every other charter, I suppose. Because even at the time when these are the firms were established, it must have felt uncertainty. They were a new organization, and there were challenges which subsequently emerged. But nonetheless, the organization was established and it functioned. And we have taken the view that we are not recruiting new customs officials. But the view in government, in cabinet, is that if the existing customs officials, they are going to be transferred to the agents. So it's the same people, it's the same equipment, it's the same expertise, the same experience, with the difference that there is a new reporting line. So it's really, and the customs officials at the port of entry are only but a small fraction of the customs officials, and of the customs officials. So you're not dismembering SARS by taking the entire customs function, including those that are based in England. You are only transferring those that are based at the port of entry. And the rest of the customs officials and their mandate within SARS will remain within SARS. Nothing is going to change. And whether you will still go to SARS and be dispersed from SARS to the national fiscus and to wherever else during the division of revenue, it's not as if the revenue generated at the port of entry will suddenly go into the DMO and then into the Department of Home Affairs. It may be a wish that, say, that's not what we want to do. And I wish to emphasize, we do not want to collect the revenue being collected by South African Revenue Service. So I think, in some ways, I have introduced and covered the areas of agreement and discussion with the different government departments. In our discussions with the Minister of Finance, informal discussions with the Minister and Deputy Minister of Finance, we all are of the view that there is a framework for agreement in what we are proposing between the two departments, that we don't need to just finalize it so that we have a clear understanding. But I think it's necessary to emphasize that with regards to everybody else, the department has been engaging in good faith, with made conditions where it was necessary, and we have not encountered intransigence on the part of any of our different partners, and neither have we been intransigent with regard to any of our partners. It's just that in the course of the discussion, the key areas that we all agree that we stand on those issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You may have taken us into confidence on your program moving forward. How are you going to handle the issues, or finalize the issues, especially with Treasure? And then how long are they, how should we expect that? Because just for the bearing on the work that we have here, we can't finalize anything until there is some sort of finality on those particular matters that are outstanding or really getting over this issue of cancelling meetings between Home Affairs and SARS. Because if you get over that, then you'll quickly have a meeting and really have a document that informs the final draft of the bill that we'll be looking at for consideration by this particular committee. If you could take us into confidence whether you already have a map up for how you can handle that, and then you may do so. You may proceed if you are ready.
Thank you, sir. We have given the cabinet the deadline of the 2nd October to finalize, but I think we can be able to finalize those issues this week. We have a scheduled meeting. As the two members of the mission executives to deal with that issue and finalize it. So we should finalize those issues this week. I think we will report both to the committee so that we don't delay the processes, but also report to cabinet. Because what cabinet wants to know is what is our compromise or agreed position in terms of moving forward. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, and honorable members, I'm sure we have heard on the matters that were CG and also a little bit of a brief on the general issues that were actually agreed upon or discussed or agreed to disagree or whatever we can term them. And honorable members, we still want to hear COSATU, and we still want to discuss the presentations, including the WUTA issues. And you'll remember in the last meeting, I found it very difficult to get members to speak to issues of clarity. They tended to discuss and violate my instructions. I hope today it's not going to happen in that particular fashion. I would love members, just to open for members to get points of clarity that they did not hear correctly or they did not hear clearly, or there is anything that can improve your understanding on the matters that he has raised. We will have time to discuss. But that's the matter that is actually presented to us. Issues of clarity, where you can just clarify you to have a correct understanding, but not debate and talk to the content whether it is correct or not correct. That's not the issue. The issue is just simply to be fair, clear that you understand. In the case we have met treasure, if you're not sure, you ask us. Have you met treasure? Then you say yes or no. Then it is fine. And when you start discussing, at least now you are clear, you are informed. This is just the period that I just wanted to open, honorable members. And then I've got Kenya. Unfortunately, I've just forgotten all the names. Let me just note, and then Kenya will start, and then Honorable Kirkland, Hussein, Stoppe, then Smith. Okay? In that order, then JJ will close. Unfortunately, I know you.
Thank you, Shabashi. Thank you, Shabashi. Thank you, Mr. But my, I just want to question clarity on the issue of neglect disagreement. As I ask this question, during the time when we were disappointed by the district. Now, I'm not quite sure. Will you please clarify to me? I don't know this disagreement because the district said that the owner rests on the cabinet to take the matter up with this issue of disagreement. Now, I didn't quite hear you clearly. What is your response on issues of neglect?
Okay,
thank you very much for your question, and thank you to the Minister. Minister, I did hear you properly, but I just want the clarity on the VMA operation to say they're going to take charge of all the borders. Now, is there going to be a new recruit, or are you going to use the same establishment that is already there? And second question is, with the Treasury, I'm so sorry because I think Treasury is more important also in this PMA. do you think this will be fixed within a week or two before we can sit around? Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Chair, thank you very much. I'll respect your request not to raise issues of a general nature. Unless you were looking at me when you said that.
No, you're not here.
I will resist the presentation and I'll stick to the point of clarity and to the debate for another day. Chair, just only three questions, please. The first one, Minister, you talked about the seconding of staff from SARS to the BMA with the approval of Cabinet. And the clarity I'm looking for is that do they report now to the BMA or still to SARS? And what provision in law is there for them for that to happen, given that the BMA has not been approved by Parliament yet? And how are you actually achieving that without a legislative framework for it? The second question is, you referred to the customs officials that will be transferred to the BMA. Is it not true that they will have to come with the management as well? Because that's where the real experience lies in terms of managing the operations of customs itself, since the BMA doesn't have that experience. So surely if you just take only the South, you're not going to maintain that experience and the work that needs to be done by customs. And then the last one, Chair, is to the Minister, is that what is it that customs is not doing now that can be done better under the BMA? Thank you.
Honourable Prof. Progressive. Honourable Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a quick look at the document summary of the meeting held between the Director General and the Acting National Commissioner. And it's just not easy because when I look at the first signature signed here for the 1st September, the signature by the Director General of the Department of Homeland Security was morning, apparently, because it's later the 3rd of September. So anything done in that age, it's just an easy summary. But I think there's a note made, and that was my concern. It says, after my discussion with the Acting Commissioner, we agreed to further discuss 2.2.1 and 2.2.2. If I summarize correctly, 2.2.1 has to do with the counter delegation in terms of the constitutional mandate of the police, and the second issue has to do with the assumed sanctions. Now, what are the issues for outstanding? Because it's just not easy in such a easy complete document. Secondly, what are the issues? Because Lisa would probably also have an opinion in terms of 2.2.2. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation of the Minister. I heard the Minister talking about the concern that the Cabinet had in relation to the written process of the staff in the cross-border. I'd also want to say that the number of written is given to the State Security, I suppose, and why will this vetting start when we are told and the new or the new staff members? And I'll just get the carry from that.
Okay. Raise your phone, Kamer.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, for your indulgence. I was trying to sit through the questions so that I have questions for clarity. Minister, as Section 1B provides with regard to the capability, the question, the clarity I seek is with regard to the capability of the DMA to conduct maritime assaults. Vis-a-vis the established capacity of the SA Navy. If you could have some mocking and meat on that bone with regards to Section 1B.
Thank you very much. And you just organize your thought on the way, Minister. Yeah. And then you can take us on.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Colleagues, for honorable members, for your
decisive questions. The owner rests with the portfolio committee. The network has had their discussions. The management committee signed its limit. With regard to the three outstanding issues, they can no longer go back to cabinet. They now come straight to the portfolio committee. It's here where those issues will be listened to, deliberated upon, and the final decision made with regard to what then ultimately goes into the legislation. Honorable Sutlan, the DNA currently present in staff, which we have a project basis, and with regard to the staff that have been seconded from SARS, who are part, who were seconded in terms of a memorandum of understanding signed between the two, the Department of Home Affairs and the South African Revenue Service. Once the bill is now finalized and signed into law, the process of recruiting the staff of the BNA will commence in earnest. First with the appointment of the National Commissioner, the other managers, leaders of the authority, and then that's when the issue of the staff from SARS, the current staff seconded from SARS, whether they are now permanently transferred and they become the staff of the DNA or not, will then be dealt with at that time. There are going to be transitional measures, and that's why one of the policies we announced was that there would be an integrated water management strategy, which is going to look at what we do with water management at the present moment, right until we can claim that the DNA has been fully established and the commissioned officers recruited and properly trained and are doing their work. The thing is that we cannot wait until the DNA is fully established for us to start paying attention to the functions of the water management. Last year, we announced Operation Pyramid with the police, the National Defense Force, and other agencies to ensure ongoing water management operations. We launched it at the Kruger National Park, and that is an ongoing process. And once the DNA therefore is established, the actual process of recruiting staff of the DNA will now start. The national children issues, we are confident that they can be resolved. We are confident that they can be resolved. It's quite unfortunate that public pronouncements were made, but those issues can be resolved. We think that we have the correct framework. Honorable Hussein, I think I've responded that the staff who are seconded from SARS to DNA reports to the project office in terms of the memorandum of understanding. Because there is no law at the present moment establishing DNA. So you can't even be called yet DNA staff. They are regarded as seconded staff. The issue of the management transfer, I think the view is that government is a collective. And once government agrees to establish a particular agency, the different government departments must collaborate to ensure that that agency is properly capacitated. And so the issue of whether we will seek any management transfer from SARS in terms of the management of the customs function will be looked at in the process of building the DNA. And we can't proclaim as yet because the people who are transferred already possess the requisite management capability. They've been working with the customs area for quite long. They've been working as the lead agency for the DCOCC for quite long, so they have the requisite management capability. If you need more, we will engage not only with the customs but also with other agencies to see if any additional people need to be transferred. The third question, could be said any point. What is it that customs are doing that cannot be done better by PMA? You asked what is it that they are not doing that can be done better by PMB. I think, as I said, the other question is, what is it that they are doing that cannot be done better by PMA? I don't think the consideration here is who will do it better. The consideration is who has created water management. So, this that they are doing so well, they continue doing it so well under the PMA. If the transfer of accounting lines, the transfer of which entity now they are reporting to, the PMA and SARS and HL said pretty much the same entity. There will be the advantage in seconding skilled, experienced people is that on their equipment is that you will no longer be starting from scratch, which could cause concern. But the concern is that it's being taken by the fact that these people are already operating in that environment, and really the main consideration is integrated water management. The good thing is that commended within that they've been doing for SAS, they will now do for the PMA. It's the same element, it's the same function that they will continue doing. With respect to the MOU with the police, no, it wasn't done in haste. The discussion started with the police immediately after it emerged that there seems to be a disagreement. Because we then asked, is there a disagreement? We were at the cabinet of Kosa in Pretoria when we got this news, and we immediately engaged both the minister and the acting commissioner, and both of them said, no, there is no disagreement. He said, but it appears we do. And so we started discussing and agreeing on formulation which would satisfy the roles of each institution with regards to these structures. Now, we then separated, that's why we separated between classical policing, that's what the police do, and saying a police officer can enter into a border environment if the crime being committed or that has been committed, they can enter into that environment and execute their mandate, their function. But the DMA commission officers can also arrest someone and hand them over to the police. Because on their own, the DMA are not a police service. When somebody is committing a crime in the border environment, these are commissioned officers. When they apprehend that person, they then hand them over to the police, who will then establish a docket and attend all the relevant activities in that regard. But I will ask the DG when I finish to respond further to the question, what is the outstanding? Honorable Skosana, the voting remains the mandate of the SSA. I'm looking behind. No, voting remains the mandate of the SSA. The other things which are clear. The DMA is not going to take over the responsibilities of state security with regards to information gathering as well as with regards to the election. They need their mandate. I think the concern is the FSA must now pay attention to building up capacity for them to do this speedily and meet the expectations of their different clients. Honorable Commander, the DMA, with regard to maritime patrols, we we will engage and cooperate with the South African Navy in terms of building their cruising capacity, because the commissioned officers aren't going to be naive. They are going to be recruited and trained. So we can't ask them to do that job. I will know where to start. But I need to receive the necessary training on the maritime water environment and all related legislation under which they are going to operate. And so we need to provide them with the necessary capacity for them to perform their functions and be ready for the task at hand. Then there is good collaboration between us and the South African National Defence Force with regard to all of this work. And the National Defence Force is eager, I think, as with all other government departments and agencies, the National Defence Force is eager to provide whatever assistance is required to us. And so it could be that there may be chances also from the National Defence Force to us with regard to maritime air and water management, water line management. But those issues are going to be dealt with as we urge towards the adoption of the legislation, and once the legislation is started and the recruitment is taking place. That's why there is a proposal for a technical committee of DDs so that it can engage thoroughly with the operational matters of the establishment of the authority. Thank you.
Honorable Thank you, Chair. Sorry. Now, in fact, I just want to get a question from the Minister, because in his presentation, he mentioned that he was engaging with the stakeholders in South Africa, but now my understanding is that we are talking about borders outside South Africa. I just want to be clarified if he also engaged the countries like Botswana, Lesotho, and Swaziland on the same thing.
Yeah, okay, but we may allow you to speak, but that is the discussion point. if you've already made a response to the Minister on the engagement with outside, you may proceed.
Thank you, sir. South African borders are South African borders. To start with, when we secure our borderline, we have no obligation, that necessity to engage our neighbors, just as they don't engage us when they secure their borderline. These are a national sovereign matters. So, once you say that you are dealing with a border outside South Africa, we are now outside South Africa, we are no longer in our tent. We are dealing with the South African border. It may be the outlying part of South Africa, but it is what by international conventions is understood to be the South African borderline in South African territory. But in having said that, we are engaging, we have presented formally the BMA process to the our neighbors at NHTSA Migration Dialogue of Southern Africa, and in the course of our plans for the international migration green paper consultative processes, we intend engaging our neighbors also, not only now on the BMA only, but on the issues of the international migration management in South Africa, which would necessarily, perforce, involve matters of the BMA. So, Honorable Sir, it is correct that we need to engage our neighbors, but the process of engaging our neighbors has started with being invited also by another forum, I just forgot it, to also make a presentation there on the establishment of the BMA. There is going to be a meeting in Ethiopia in October, where the EU countries are going to be coming together, ministers for migration. We will also make our statement known in that regard.
And I think on an ongoing basis, as a matter of discussion, we need them to discuss how strengthening South Africa's border management aligns with the AU's Agenda 2063 in terms of free movement. But we will also, through the course of these discussions, present our own understanding of the relationship between the two and the processes that we are undertaking, as well as the processes that the African Union is undertaking. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, the discussion is with Honorable Kigala. You can talk the whole day. And we just have to take a conscious decision that we stop it. And then now we stop it now, because he's, I mean, he's passionate about what he's speaking about. He can speak for the whole day. And then, so we just need to manage time as well. But what I want to say is that remember that today it was not Home Affairs Day. It was for others. And Home Affairs, we are heading them next week to come and respond to all presentations. It will be their day. And then responding to the presentations, then and answering your questions almost the whole day, if ever we have all the time. So I would like to thank the minister, especially fully knowing that there is an activity that he's supposed to deal with now at 11 o'clock. And then also previous members to release him as and when he's ready to go and honor that 11 o'clock program. And then we can just have the DG has to respond briefly in a minute or two on the matter that has been delegated to him, to especially in relation to the 231 and 232, whichever. And then we will go straight to COSATU. COSATU might have engagement today fully, and the other presentations, because next week it won't be there again. DG may proceed, and the minister may be released.
No, thanks, sir. And the honorable member. No, sir, you see this thing stems out of paragraph 2.2. Because 2.2 says the first second sentence will, despite the establishment of BMA, continue to deal with the classical police enforcement. Is it that relates to crime, whilst the BMA will deal with the border law enforcement function pertaining to movement of people and goods as in visiting the DMA. Then it says now, subject to the above, clerical policy will be a concurrent function between BMA and SAPS within the course of entry and border law enforcement. So now this second paragraph must be clear now what it explains on the above. You see number 2.31 start by saying if the intention, and then paragraph 2.32 says if, however. So now we need to sit together and then now combine those two paragraphs to explain exactly what that concurrent function will be handled. So that's all I think it means. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And then the SAPS is a memorandum that the Home Affairs has actually indicated to us. Is it your memorandum as well? Anybody can take the mic there and speak to us.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members of Committees. Yes, I can confirm that there was a meeting between the DG of Home Affairs and the AD National Commissioner. And in that meeting, the deliberations, yes, this is how they came with this memorandum. We can confirm that this memorandum, yes, was from the two departments. As it explains, even the paragraphs that the DG have spoken about of 231 and 232, we are aware of, and I understand the DG says it requires further engagement, which I'm sure between the two departments that will see the place. That is it, unless some members of my delegation wants to add anything, they are welcome to. Thanks, Chairperson.
It looks like they are happy.
represented them very well. Now, I think that it is correct that it has been confirmed that this is the case, and that's what he really wanted, and they are happy about that. Can you have maybe 1 minute or two for Kostadi to come and set up? Treasury wants to speak, but there are outstanding matters that you need to go and grind the other side of the fence. I'm not sure whether... Yeah. Okay, let's give you that news.
Yes. No, thank you, sir. I need to go to the other committee, so I didn't want to... But my colleague is here. The staff colleague is also listening. But I just want to confirm, I think, at the minister's outline, we're still engaging, so that is all in order. I just wanted to check here just a quick issue. Last time I said there was a report from the Davis Texas Committee. If you had it, I will give it to you. They did put it out on their website, so it is out in the public domain. And I think I just want to point out that when the minister referred to the GTAS study, that is obviously GTAS does that work for Home Affairs. It's not Treasury. It's like a component within Treasury that does technical work for others. So I'll leave it at that. That's all what I want to say.
Don't create problems for us. Don't create problems for us. Do not create problems for us. Those issues, carry them to Home Affairs Office, deliberate there, and you come and advise us on how you have reached consensus and how you want us to move forward. Don't put this one up and create a problem and uncertainty for us. And I think if you can assist us that you go there and then have those discussions, all those reports you're speaking about, and then should inform your discussions. And then you reach consensus, then you come and present a coordinated, concerted position that seeks to assist us to move forward. And you'll be helping us. Yes. I think that is what is happening. Because like I said, is that you have put an unfinished business. That's why I was having a problem of just simply allowing you to speak. Because you will be throwing something that Home Affairs will throw counter, and then we're going to end up not really moving forward. Let's take that short step in those air-conditioned offices. Yes. And then now when you come here, then you give us something that you people are committed to take forward and resolve the matters that we have here. Assist us is that, and of course is that if there is a service that you need to render the other side, we can't hold your legs, and then you must go and deliver that service as well. And if you have got a person that is capable of actually taking note of the things that will be said by consulting the discussions of members, then report that to yourself. Thank you very much. And then we hope that that will reach you. Thank you very much. You are released. Thank you. I hope that Kostadi is ready and ready to resolve the parliamentary strike. You may proceed with the presentation, but also make sure that as you are presenting, if there are issues that the minister has raised in relation to Kostadi that will be speaking, try and also clarify as we move forward, so that the members, when you finish, members should be able to engage with you. Thanks, you may proceed.
Okay, thanks very much, Commissioner. Good morning to members. Thanks to the committee to make space for Kostadi. So let's share our two cents of thought. Yes, my name is Matthew, my son is Cox, and so Kostadi, the parliamentary coordinator. I think also, Chair, that any time the committee that needs us, or the honourable members and other committees need us, we're always available to try to assist each other. People in the opposition party always want to convert as many people as possible. Chair, I'm also apologize for Nahau. Nahau is going to join us. The combat is to start this morning, but he's on the road. I think when he comes, it'll be great. Otherwise, we'll proceed to comment. So my apologies in that regard. But anyway, Kostadi will then try 17 of civil unions. Chair, it says the better management authority was a very critical thing. This is also why we wanted to share our thoughts with you guys. Without going too much into painful detail. in terms of political conducts, there is good discussion there. Because it ties in each other when we focus on the details. I think so we agree with government on the massive migration challenges we have. I think if you just go to fences and go into any rural village, even the deepest part of Limpopo, you can see there's a massive migration challenge. I think so we have quite a few different presentations from the Department of Home Affairs Network, where they've given very scary information about the extent of migration and the state government. I think so in terms of the issue of customs, it's definitely a very fair thing, because it's something that about 15 years ago, we almost lost the sector industry because of the issue of customs. So we had this sense of the issue of cheap imports flying into the economy and then collapse local industries. So I think we must also say that in terms of historical migration issues, we're actually quite good to the work that the Pap has done, for example, on the issue of Lesotho. Because we want to distinguish between countries like Lesotho, which have a historical relationship to us, and which have political historical debts in the countries, as opposed to, for example, a country like Bangladesh, etc., etc. So I think that Pap has tried to handle this in a good way. I think that politically, society always wants to see a capacitive developmental state, and how to strengthen the state service to do its work. We are worried that at times we have a fragmentation tendency in government. We have an election, we have a new cabinet, we create new departments. So that takes about 5-10 years for those ministers to get a seat on the ground, as opposed to us just trying to have a level of developmental or delivery issues out in the existing departments. But having said that, sure, we were convinced that the Department of Home Affairs weren't agreed in the beginning, but I think after engaging with the DG, the Minister, even the friend Elroy, we were convinced that even these were single border management government order. We think that that's fragmented currency, and that can't continue. Our issue really shows about the vehicle to do that. So when we saw the original draft bill sent last year, we were very worried about it. Actually, it was quite worrisome. We worried about measures in the DNA of the public service, about the bill allowing for new labor relations procedures to be determined by the minister, the blanket ban on the right to strike or picket, the issue around disclosures, outsourcing customs. So those are the same kind of historical context, so just to assist members to see how far we've come in our engagement in government. I'm also chair, I'm also the president of the department, and to the DG, and to the minister, and to the ERA. We have a lot of engagements with the department and the ministry. I'm also chair of the there were some positive aspects to it, because after we engage with departments, some of us don't want to engage. So let's engage for the sake of formality, and nothing changes. I think you can see we have quite a good sort of progress in many areas with the departments. So we have a sort of agreement with the civic and order. We have agreed that there is a need to intervene in the migration and customs challenges. We were happy that the department agreed to let the DMA under the Public Service Bargaining Council. But also the use of themselves of the Public Service Bargaining Council, labor relations procedures, agreements, policies, etc. And the rest of the bill provides for recognizing the unions in terms of negotiating any changes there. I think so we're also pleased that the department agreed to locate the DMA under the government employees pension funds. And of course, the promotion of conditions of service or transfer staff. So in terms of the issue of right to strike, I think I'm in a difficult step because community better, still not better. We are talking about, because it's quite rare, that we need to distinguish between the security staff and the non-security staff, like cleaning staff, for example. And I think that the proper wants to look at the security staff and essential services, that follow the minimum level procedures that are going to the Essential Services Commission, the Lord of Edge, the staff which is done with the police, cultural services, defense force, etc. I think so also last year we were quite pleased that the department kind of re-emphasized the need to be in line with the Particular Disclosures Act. So then we made quite good progress with Chair and we were quite pleased with them. Basically we left with 2.5 areas of disagreement, to put it that way. I think the main one is the issue of the agency. For us, Chair, as a member, this is really an ideological concern. We view it as a fragmentation of the state, that we are hollowing the government public service departments. Instead of addressing whatever management or delivery issues are within those departments. Because as the DG and the minister say, they're taking the same staff, the same infrastructure, the same systems. So how will it be an improvement over the existing departments? But also worry, Chair, not just about the ministers, but about other departments. Because we also have the Department of Health, terminological agency. The hospitals are in chaos, let's create an agency. Public works, exercise, hey, public properties are a mess, let's create an agency. Instead of trying to deal with what are the issues in this, how do I get into public and say, well, we've got this crisis, police stations are a mess, create an agency. Instead of trying to fix whatever management or administrative issues out of the department's chair. So we also concerned about the issue of autism, but I'll come back to it in a minute. We did start to listen with open ears to our colleagues in other affairs around their challenges. And we raised the issue of, for example, Twitter is not a system where we can't afford a border post to have the system offline. We've got 1,000 people at eight bridge, etc. They raised the issue of public works being an inefficient language. And we sympathize that we thought, yeah, you'd rather just insist on having a bill exempted to be able to see tests and public works, etc. But it must still address long-term those challenges in those departments. So the issue of higher salaries will also raise an issue. But I'm not sure in the public service why you can't pay workers a little wage. If you feel that assistant director is too low a salary, you can easily support to say promote that person to a deputy director or a director. Our public service experience in Ohio is very suspicious that this is a fact of javelin. That when we create an agency, I can then become afterwards a commissioner. As a commissioner of agency, I have a salary of $3.5 million. But as a DG, it limits to a salary of, I think, $1.8 million, give or take. So at the same time, it sounds like a contradiction. It says, you know, this time Treasury is going to blame unions for the high wage burden government. They're going to say the wage burden excesses. We must have lower wage increases. We must freeze public service increases. And yet we have a motivation for agency to create to pay higher wages to the top. I think we have this kind of approach to the issue of salaries. It is so special, but this is also, maybe it's a bad example here, but that's just if it is. The issue of Arikana, where the mining companies offer higher wages to certain types of employment, recommending the more bargaining processes, that really creates a bit of a friction there. I don't think that's going to happen here, but I don't see that as my point. I think they also make the comments for members to assess unions want to remain in the public service. They want to enjoy those protections, the security of service, the conditions, and of course, as community data says, the collective bargaining benefits. We are deeply concerned that this is going to affect about 10,000 public servants, give or take the figures. So the other issue is we couldn't understand what we're saying as security, recognized by an agency. That steps the Defense Force, State Security, and Correctional Services are not agencies, they're public service departments, with their own limitations in terms of what staff can do and cannot do. I think so the last level of disagreement is around outsourcing. I'm not sure we were quite pleased when the department included the clause in effect ban outsourcing for security functions. We were quite pleased with that. Traditionally, it's been a first step for pop proof and how survivors, you go to airports, you go to harbors, national key banks, but you have private security, sometimes even international security companies managing there. So having this approach, I think it's the future to correct those situations. But of course, if we start to see the gap, we will try to take a gap. We wanted government to be bold to enter that outsourcing completely. Because often it's said that for the first guys who get outsourced is your cleaning staff, your drivers, your so-called non-skilled workers. You can see the best of what you can even see in Parliament. So, the issue of customs was an issue of deep concern back in the beginning. It was an issue that was very strong by manufacturing trade unions, factory, the clothing textile workers, given their experiences of cheap Chinese imports devastating the textile industry. So we completely agree with the department. We need to manage it very sensitively. We were worried about possible unintended consequences if we transfer customs from an existing body like SAS to a brand new one, things might fall through cracks. I think we were assisted or comforted to an extent by the department's proposals to limit customs transfers to the borderline function and to do a phase-in approach. So there were the five phase-in approach when we said right, where they started a smaller border post at Ennis, for example, and then concluded the end of the harbors to the time period. But I think we need to kind of point back to give us a short information about and as you see, it's one of the treasury inside on one page, home affairs is on another page, but we depend upon our Queensland government to say there will be no unintended consequences of the customs being transferred, there will be no transmission under the road. I think so we can't afford an economy where losing jobs is a very unintended consequence. So here we really depend upon government to assist us. I think in conclusion, sir, the politics we need to agree with governments. We need to manage migration, we need to manage interventions properly. The need to create a single state body to run the border post. I think we're very pleased with the many important areas we managed to resolve with our colleagues and friends in the village. I think it's a good achievement, sir, and I should appreciate the department's engagement right to the heart. Again, we really want Treasury, Home Affairs, even DPI to come to one position around ease of customs. But of course, sir, as you requested the issue of disagreements, we are really diehard around the issue of public service. We want to be able to run within the public service, but to be a security body as an agency. And of course, we love governments. Home Affairs to be more than that, all outsourcing. So we also have other departments to take a note from Home Affairs and to insert similar clauses in their legislation. We appreciate Home Affairs and a good precedent in that regard. I think so, in a few of the ends, I included my house set up last week on the BNN. We didn't deliver it because the government says, compared to the other two polite, we speak very much soft English. And then we also get a sign from our members on the ground. So we've had a brief moment to hear from the department to hear frustration, the fear, the anger of our members on the ground. I can't bear that we are two sides of the government. So we're going to hear from the lines now, so to speak. I think a member of duty concerned about the conditions of service protection, either moves from a public service situation to an agency situation. The fear that I've mentioned, the state, after the outsourcing, the issue of a javelin, public service wage burden, of course, any precedent for other departments. And I think, certainly, we've seen in the House that there's already bundling some members of impossible industrial action, a public service unit backlash, etc. So to mix that, as said, there's some good parts. We've got some engagement, which is very useful. We push for that. I think as the public services are really the hot potato of us. We hope that the members would understand our position, and they will ever stay beside each other before this bill is concluded in the National Assembly. And I'd like to say, I personally engage with Commerce Minister, the region, has been left to how to find a win-win approach, whether they address that is fundamental need and also address our members in the broader public concerns as well. So I think we're halfway there, but we want to push for the final stage. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the presentation that you have made, and then you will stand ready together with Adam to respond to certain issues and any NGO that may have sent us a presentation here when the members are actually posing the question during discussion. But as Kosat, you also sometimes you must talk to this particular issue as you raised it, where we have got borders that are porous, we have got people that come in without documentation, threatening the job security of your members, and left and right, and its implications as we move forward, and what is there that must be done to actually deal with some of these issues. There may not be a silver bullet answer, but the continuous engagement with the department, with ourselves, then at the end of the day, you will reach a sort of consensus. No one is going to win 100%. There will be a give and take somewhere for us to have a consensus agreed and still be open for an amendment as we move forward, the conditions are put and prove to be different. Honorable members, I hope that you have a copy of the document from Adam, and which is going to try and talk to. And then after that, then we are going to engage Adam and the PAPS. I'm correct with PAPS. Yes. And whoever is around here in relation to the presentations, and then we may ask them to just come and line up here as well to clarify wherever we may need to clarify. And if you are ready, Adam,
thank you, the President. Good morning, honorable members and guests. My apologies for the very race method.
I think any of the members should understand very clearly. Adam is our contact advisor. His job is just to assist us to read the presentations that we have received. Then it should not be taken as if he is representing the owners and the content of those presentations. He's just assisting us to present them so that we are able to have a view. What is it that they are saying? You may proceed.
Thank you for your perception, Chairperson. So from the Christophe submission, so I haven't summarized, but they've given us an overview. There were 10 other technical submissions. You have 11, but one of them is the letter. My apologies for the small text. It's a lot of information that I split into in a small amount of time. So I haven't had time to make a sort of presentation. I will email this summary to anybody else who needs it, but basically it's summarizing the submissions we got and trying to divide them into the relevant clauses, where the relevant clauses weren't specified. So we started with clause-by-clause discussion of the various stakeholders' submissions, and then there's a general overview towards the end of broader issues that don't fit into any specific clause. There were three main issues relating to the preamble. Maybe turn the lighting down, you might be able to see this a bit better. I think somebody can know if it's possible. It's not okay. But anyway, the main for the first submission that we have on the preamble is that the specific mention of SANDF in the preamble, but not of SAP. There is a responsibility of in 205C of Constitution. Namely the budget of the police to serve to prevent, combat, and investigate crime and to maintain public order. Section 1A of J of the Constitution, or the previous Constitution, which is still in force, provides that the National Commissioner shall be responsible for such functions relating to border control and import and export of goods as may be assigned to this service by law. So they're suggesting there, which is an underlined, and generally in this submission, the underlined submissions are actual suggestions on insertion in the bill, is that you'll see, we'll have to work in conjunction with the actual bill, but you'll see that the preamble indicates that there's like acknowledging and acknowledging further in the preamble on the bottom there, so they want to add another one, saying, and acknowledging further constitutional responsibility of the National Commission of Facts for their functions relating to border control and the import and export of goods and may be assigned to the service by law. So they just want to say, to make specific mention of SAP as well as the current mention of the Defence Force. Then, secondly, moving on to the Scalabrini Centre. Scalabrini Centre is an NGO that works a lot with migrants and also do research. They're an advocacy department, an advocacy NGO working throughout the country. Their main mention is that, in terms of the preamble, that they want specific mention of non-refoulement law, which is a principle under international law and also in the Refugees Act that prevents you from, it's basically got to do with refugees, prevents the refugee being turned away at the border when the life might be in danger. And there's historical issues with this in the Immigration Act as it relates to the Refugees Act. So they wanted that specific mention be mentioned. I think that's best under these bullets in the preamble, recognizing further the couple of bullets there. That would probably fit in best, sticking the bullets there on non-refoulement, not because sending people back to possible persecution. Business Unity South Africa and Tourism Business Council of South Africa had a similar submission on the preamble, and in that the bill in fact doesn't mention measures to promote legitimate trade and assist in facilitating legitimate migration. Rather, that's more about security and control, and that they're worried that it is mentioned in the preamble that it might have a more of a militarization effect, like having this pseudo-military body involved at the borders and not including, not being mindful enough of the imperative to promote trade in the region, or in the country. Then Then we move on to the second part, which is got to do with definitions. So the definitions then are on page 4 of the book, they start. The Salibuni Center then asked that the definition of non-refoulement, what I just referred to before, as it's stated in the refugee bill, be inserted in under definition 2, because it's been updated if it's inserted above. And basically this, I've just cut and pasted the submission as it stands in the Refugees Act. But basically it says that you can't send people back when their lives will be in danger because they're part of a particular race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership of a particular social group. And also that their lives might be under threat from external aggression, occupation, terrorist and disruption of public order, things like that. It's basically the Refugees Act that relates to African Union and international refugee commitments. So they want specific mention of that. Transnet asked that the definition of airspace be changed. So as it stands, they're saying airspace means the space within the outer limits of internationally recognized airspace of the Republic. This is what they want. They want it to be airspace means the space within the outer limits of the internationally recognized airspace of the border. Whereas the currently stands is that air borders being the outer limit of internationally recognized airspace of the Republic. It's got something to do with that space can't be a border, and it's a technical thing, but I'm sure the department will look at it. They also mentioned that border law enforcement area could have the definition of the border law enforcement area could have the unintended effect of limiting the jurisdiction of the DMA. In terms, shortly of the bill, the current ports, points and places of entry or exit will remain, but they're not placed, located in close proximity to the Republic's borders, the definition with the 10 kilometers, the authority would have no jurisdiction. So I think it's basically supposed to do border processing outside of the 10-kilometer area. One thing that comes to mind is a train station. I think this is what they're specifically worried about. It's like a train station might be outside of 10 kilometers. There are occasions for that, and that they might have jurisdiction there. Then the Department of Justice had submissions on 6 different submissions. They're mostly technical. They want to know what the basis is for the 10-kilometer distance, and what's the definition of reasonable distance is beyond the internationally. So, like, how far can the border officials go into another country, and how reasonable? What is a reasonable distance? So, these are mostly technical submissions. They say that the border management in definition should delete the word of South African National Defence Force, which is already defined. So the say Defence Force. The Border Protection Functions, delete of the Republic of South Africa 1996, fully to advise that the Constitution is already defined, so you don't have to say the full thing. Commissioned Officer, they indicate it's not clear to the public what is mentioned by Commissioned Officer. I think it's reference to the Police Act, but they want to be more specific. And they saying the definition of Defence Force should ascribe to the Defence Act 2002, where I think at present it's actually they reference the Constitution, if I'm not mistaken, because it's the more specific legislation. The definition of prescribed should mean prescribed by regulations in terms of 37 of this Act. I think it's just a more specific reference to where the what prescriptions are. It's prescribed usually relates to regulations. The border law enforcement functions, this is I'll go into more detail in the next second, I'll deal with that. The tourism board, the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, if you go on to the next page, then deals with section 2 of the bill, which relates to the application of the Act. They think it relates to the definition above. They say the border law enforcement function means function conferred on authority by law in terms of this act. So where, and clause 2.3b provides that the act will not apply to the border law enforcement function performed by the defense force in respect of the airspace of the Republic. Oh, sorry, I've jumped. I actually started on the next page. With the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, not the DDCSA. So let me just continue with that. So I'm on the top of page 2 now, sorry. So there was just some confusion because the section or clause 2 of the bill refers to border law enforcement functions relating to the NEF, but the definition says border law enforcement functions relate to the BMA. So there might be some confusion. They need to just look at how that is formulated so there's not an overlap. Perhaps just using a different word to border law enforcement function as it relates to the NDF. Then the TBSA code, so the bottom of page 1, and that basically reference is made to the president, but in case there's confusion, we need to specify that the president of South Africa, so that we don't have the president of Botswana trying to say anything. Then we go on to page 2 again, the object of the act. Again, the Department of Justice proposed 2 insertions here. They say that border management in the definition means the execution of border law enforcement functions and includes cooperation with the defense force. In terms of clause 3, the object of the bill is to establish an empowered BMA to achieve, amongst others, cooperation and coordination of border management matters in general. That's their underlying. So, the definition of border management is very limited in the definition section, but in this section on the object of the act, they broaden the scope of border management to border management matters in general, and as basically just said, there seems to be a contradiction between the definition and the particular clause, and they need to be make it more specific. So that they don't over expand the application of the act, the object of the act. Then moving on to clause 5, there's 2 submissions there, one from HAPS and one from the Urban Chamber of Commerce. Pardon me. That indicates that the functions of authority, in order to clarify the functions of the BMA as it relates to SAP, reference should be made in paragraph C to 2 SAP. It's proposed that underlying portion be inserted. So we have, we're still following on the functions of the Act, that organs of state border community or any other person in this border law enforcement functions, that we insert, cooperate and coordinate with SAPs, the organs of state border communities or any other persons in this border law enforcement functions. So specific mission again there to SAPs because of their particular role in the border enforcement area. The Urban Chamber of Commerce is concerned that SAPS and Metro Peace are mandated to have expertise and zero tolerance of policing, and that law enforcement authorities, unified law enforcement authorities, ensure safe and full coverage of the South African geographical space. And that if the BMA is mandated in a separate area, that it must create a division in this security, the sense of security in the country. That SAPS must be given the full opportunity to participate in enforcement of the bill, perhaps through what the minister said, mentioned about concurrent functions. And then there's a submission from a private individual on Chapter 3 in general, which relates to the commissioner, the head of this BMA, that relates to clause 7212. He says it would be better to introduce a board rather than a commissioner, the accounting authority, and that the board could still report to the minister, but it would also allow the introduction of a CFO, including the commissioner, CFO, but also representatives from SADC and members from the public or industry experts. He believes it would prevent too centralization of power in the commissioner. But secondly, on chapter 3E, that's actually 7.1E, that the committee should rather never be found guilty in a court of law of a crime given the security and moral character of the post. So, over here it says he is convicted of a crime, needs to be pardoned. So he's saying he needs stricter guidelines there. And then, moving on to clause 7, the appointment of the commissioner. There are two submissions there, from the private individual and from the Department of Justice. The one suggestion is that clause 1 should indicate that, like at chapter 9 institutions, the commissioner should begin a non-renewable term of 6 years rather than 5 year renewable ones. This is a carry any kind of corrupt behavior in this very influential position. Justice specifically made reference to sub-laws 1, G1 and G2, that the president must appoint a person who is a commissioned officer or must subsequent to his or her appointment do the training and get security clearance. The problem is that if he does security clearance and then after he's appointed, then what if he doesn't pass the training and the security clearance? So the word subsequent needs to be looked at there. So maybe rather do security clearance first. Maybe doing the interview process or something like that. So this is concerned about that. Then clause 8 relates to the terms of the office of the commissioner. The Tourism Business Council speaks to sub-clause 5, which says that if the commissioner is over 65, the president can extend his term by 2 years. But they're saying then this needs to add that in its entirety that his term should not exceed 10 years, which is what's proposed in the bill. So he doesn't want the guy over 65 to keep on getting 2 years, 2 years, 2 years. Okay, so then they also say that provision needs to be made in the terms of the commissioner's officer to have a written employment contract entered in between the commissioner and the president, who must incorporate the provisions of Section 57 of the Public Finance Management Act, and setting out the commissioner's measurable work performance objectives and targets. So just some more accountability from the commissioner there, a specific accountability. Then clause 9, moving on to the next page, again from the Department of Justice relating to the removal of office of the commissioner, removal from office. They say that clause 1 there is actually not necessary, that because it says the commissioner can be suspended in these specific conditions. But then the specific conditions are mentioned in sub-clause 2, so you can do away with sub-clause 1 and it doesn't have exactly the same meaning. They also mentioned that sub-clause 4, that the commissioner is suspended pending an investigation, and in terms of sub-clause 2, he may continue to receive his remuneration while being investigated. They suggest that the time limits on the completion of the investigation to ensure speedy and cost-effective reappointment of a commissioner or finalization of the matter, as is provided for similarly in the South African Police Services Act. Then clause 10, Tourism Business Council, speaking to the service conditions of a commissioner. In sub-clause 5, they say that officers' adequate and appropriate training should include aspects of tourism service excellence, including avoiding unnecessary delays at ports of entry. I don't know if this necessarily needs to be in the Act itself, but at the very least it could be considered in the regulations or in the general functioning. It's basically ensuring that tourism isn't forgotten. Then the function of the commissioner, a submission on clause 11 from Justice, saying that the commissioner must exercise control over and manage authority in accordance with the Act and directions of the minister. They say that it should rather reference the constitution as well, otherwise there might be a wrong impression that the commissioner of GMA is only accountable to the minister and nobody else. The delegation by the commissioner in clause 12, rental justice, in sub clause 1, provides the commissioner may delegate to any official of authority any functional power conferred or GP imposed on him. They're worried that it is a bit too broad and that they suggested that perhaps be limited to delegation to officials of a more senior rank as it relates to these more important functions. The appointment officials, the tourism board of tourism business council, in terms of 13 sub clause 4, the minister may only cancel a commission after notifying the commissioner and the officer concerned. So if they're going to fire anybody, they have to tell the commissioner that too. The minister must tell the commissioner as well as the officer concerned. That seems to make sense. Scalabrini Center there on commission offices, in terms of clause 14, particularly clause 14.3, they're saying when performing any broader law enforcement function, the officer must exercise powers in a manner that takes due regard of fundamental rights of persons as guaranteed under Chapter 2 of the Constitution, the principle of non-refoulement, as in not sending people back to their possible demise. Public international law and particularly legislation in relation to trafficking, refugees, criminal law, and victims of sexual violence. This is particularly in relation to their work, which often sees violations or not lack of consideration for these specific pieces of legislation with people whose lives are in danger, and they just want specific reference of these pieces of legislation mentioned in the basic how commissioned officers work. So basically people who are going to be appointed at the BMA, how they're what things they're going to consider. This is a list of other things that are mentioned as requirements for these commissioned officers. Then going on to clause 15, two submissions there. Tourism Business Council indicates that reference is made to Section 4, but they say that it needs to be more specific that actually Chapter 2, Section 4.2. In their submission they say Chapter 4, but it's actually Chapter 2. So that's just basically a more specific reference, so there's no confusion. Department of Justice says in relation to the duties and functions of powers of Border Guard, that subclause 1 could be interpreted that an officer also has the power to enforce provisions relating to the administration of the BMA, which doesn't seem to be the intention. Rather, they should limit clause 15.1 to the enforcement of the bill or the act as it relates to the duties, functions, and powers of an officer related provided in the bill. I'm not exactly sure about this, but it's got more to do with technicality, the division between administrative and security officials. The question also arises, they say, in relation to the enforcement of the Immigration Act and other relevant legislation in the law enforcement area, or will it be covered under the definition of board law enforcement functions at the time? So, where relevant legislation applies to them, will they also be implementing that, or there needs to be more clarity on that, they say. In terms of the terms of conditions and employment of border officials, clause 16, the private individual says he disagrees that you can arrest with or without a warrant because that would increase security. And then the limitation of the rights of officers. Justice, I say on clause 1 there that subject to the Constitution, the right of officers may be limited in the prescribed manner. The intent is there to limit their rights by way of regulation, which is subordinate to the law. Is it not substantive law should be addressed in the bill itself? So they, the word there prescribed basically usually makes reference to regulations. So they're saying that their specific roles in the Constitution shouldn't be in law that's lower than the bill itself. So they should rather be referred to in the bill itself. That's a matter of jurisprudence there. Then 17 carries on the Scalabrini Center on the limitations of offices, and they said there's numerous historical and recent examples of corruption and abuse of power by border officials, which they list quite extensively in their submission. And therefore they urge DHA and other role players to continue to develop set of counter-corruption measures in the border management regime and to build an effective workplace that uphold their obligations and duties. It's more of a general submission, but it relates kind of to the limitations of rights of officers so that they don't abuse their powers. So I put it in there. Then moving on to subclause 18, powers of entry, search, and seizure with a warrant. Justice says that an officer may, with a warrant, enter, et cetera, but they specifically warrant that they may be able to arrest or detain any person even if this is suspected of contravening any provision of this act. The heading of the clause should also reflect the arrest or detention of a person, as it is a substantial power. So you'll see there the heading actually only mentions search, seizure, and seizure with a warrant. So if they can arrest, it should be part of the heading too. As it was mentioned in one of the previous admissions, the bill provides for more than power functions and duties of an officer of the BMA. So subclause 18F could be interpreted as in a very broad way. So for example, an officer may arrest or detain the minister for not determining the policy for the BMA in accordance with their PFMA. So they think it could be more specific, as provided in clause 24.2 for not tabling reports. They suggested a person should only be arrested for committing offence, and it is suggested that specific provisions in terms of which a person may be arrested or detained, namely clause 36 of the bill, will be referred to. So sub-clause that needs to refer to clause 36, which is the specific list of offences. And the bill actually seems to only, or this clause only seems to allow that they can only arrest people in terms of the BMA Act, but not other legislation such as the Immigration Act. Also, I think they mentioned that it's not entirely clear what will happen to the Immigration Act once the BMA Act is implemented. So that needs to be clarified there. Then in terms of powers of entry, search, and seizure without a warrant, the same submission before that arrest, if it's relevant to be included in the heading, apply here. But that does indicate that the clause allows for warrants, without a warrant, to exercise some of the powers in clause 18, entry, search, and inspection. But no mention is made of arrest or detention of a person. Could this be interpreted, even if a person is caught committing offence within the border enforcement area, that the warrant must first be obtained? Or is the intention that the provisions of Criminal Procedure Act 1977 relating to the arrest of a person without a warrant would then apply? So there's no clarity on what happens and how to arrest. More clarity is needed there. Then Transnet indicates on searching without warrants that the book could have unintended consequences for Transnet freight rail. Because the clause allows for the BMA officials to stop and search. So they're saying it's not possible for a train to stop anyway, and that might be dangerous for officials to climb on and get electrocuted if they try to do that whilst promoted at the station. And that's actually only allowed by law to stop at a train station. So what they suggest is that it would be impractical for them to conduct inspections at the borderline where there isn't always a stopping point for the trains when they go through the borderline. So they suggest that recommend that inspection and train locomotives be conducted at the last designated railway station or siding before reaching the border law enforcement area, which can be up to 10 kilometers away sometimes. So again, relating to the 10-kilometer protection zone, it's be considered in the definition of that border protection area. Then going on to the next page, clause 20, again, justice indicated in terms of subclause 2B4 that an officer may, without a warrant during a routine inspection, detain or arrest any person reasonably suspected of contravening the act. Because the same concerns raised in clause 10 on the limitations of rights apply. Basically, they can arrest for very broad grounds. So that it needs to be looked at more specifically. There appears to be also a contradiction between clauses 18, 19, and 20 regarding the arrest or detention of a person. 18 indicates that an officer may, without a warrant, arrest or detain a person. 19, that an officer may not arrest or detain a person without a warrant. But clause 20, when conducting a routine inspection of a person, an officer may arrest or detain a person without a warrant. So which one's true, or how it applies needs to be specified. Business Unity South Africa, a journal of routine searches, indicate that the same test be applied in clause 19 in relation to routine searches, that an officer should only be permitted to search where there is reasonable grounds to believe that a warrant will be granted in the right one, that it won't be granted in time to apprehend the person. So that not including this test would open up for abuse and victimization and perhaps inconsistent application. So they could threaten to arrest you without a warrant and abuse those powers. So they say that needs to be looked at. They make a specific insertion that there's a section that section or clause, which actually is clause 22 and 23, with all the numbers that need to change afterwards being inserted as follows. The written authorization referred to in section 21 about that at all times be available for such a roadblock and be accessible for inspection by the public. The written approval must state the following: the date at which the roadblock was authorized, the approximate duration of the roadblock, and the place and object of the proposed action. This would align the bill with the South African Police Act in terms of conducting searches as well. And then in terms of clause 23, an officer may, without a warrant, conduct a routine inspection. That's only on the grounds that they believe that a warrant will be issued if it's applied, or a delay in obtaining a warrant will defeat the object of the warrant. So basically, just wanting the search without a warrant to have the same provisions as the search with a warrant. Then, moving on to subclause 21, relating to powers relating to the maritime borders, or the borders of the Coast Guard, as it's referred to in the bill. Justice indicating that clause 21G requires that they may without a warrant search any vessel to inquire whether any provisions of the Act have been contravened. But the problem is that the Act only applies once you're on the vessel. So the contradiction of in terms of the timing. So they inquire into whether any provision or of any relevant legislation pertaining to import or export of goods or the entry of exits of persons has been contravened. So it's just a technical matter there that they should be able to search vessels in terms of other law rather than the Act itself, which only applies once you're on the vessel. In terms of 21J, they just indicate that stipulate that any officer may give directions to the master and crew of and members of a vessel, stopped, boarded, or searched, and may be necessary for any purpose specified in this Act. They underline there. It's not clear for which purpose the other than those listed in clause 21 an officer can give direction. So rather than refer to the Act, they should refer to clause 21, which is the reasons for issuing a warrant. They're basically more specific reference rather than the whole Act. There are also no provisions relating to the arrest or detention of persons who are legally on a vessel and who commit an offence in 2036 of the bill. So provision needs to be made for the press to be able to arrest illegals. Then moving on to the next page, clause 22, on a private individual indicating there that the inter-ministerial committee ought to be abolished in favour of a ministerial committee that is headed by the Minister of Home Affairs with representatives from all affected departments and also citizens. He didn't specify that. I think it's got more to do with the difficulty of getting all the ministers who are already on the inter-ministerial committees to be on another inter-ministerial committee. And then going to clause 25, this is from Kimberley Resources. This individual is based in a community that has families on both sides of the border. So they also issue a newspaper article showing the difficulty of basically living with your family that's been flipped by a borderline. And they indicate that the Ministerial Consultative Committee must also promote awareness campaigns for border communities to assist in prevention of border crimes. So the Inter-Ministerial Committee and the related Border Technical Committee need to kind of bring the border communities on board. On the Inter-Ministerial Consultative Committee and the Border Technical Committee, the Department of Justice indicates that sub-clause C of 25 should provide for the compilation of inter-ministerial the consultative committee, but that the ministers of international relations, justice, and correctional services don't form part of the committee, although the president may designate any other cabinet member. So they're basically, I think, wondering why those ministries aren't included. The next note is just on that it needs to be in alphabetical order. There's one department that's not in alphabetical order there. 24/5 stated the committee may determine its own rules and procedures. It's suggested that the provision be expanded to read that the committee may determine its own rules and procedures which may not be in conflict with the Constitution or any other legislation. So they're just making sure that they're not giving themselves all powerful powers. Tourism Business Council indicate that 25(2) that the organs of state specified in clause 23(b), the Inter-Ministerial Committee, are not specified in section in 26. There's a slight technical thing. This is supposed to be a line between 25 and 26, which was deleted by mistake. But the Tourism Business Council submission there is in terms of 26. There's a list of departments in 25 that are part of the ministerial committee, but they're saying that there must also be a list of related departments or, say, relevant heads of departments that are included in the technical committee. So there's a similarity between the two clauses. Moving on to, again on 26, the Border Technical Committee, which is from the Salisbury Centre, they make the submission specifically in terms of this commission, but it fits well here, that it says that the Human Rights Commission must also be considered, must also form part of this technical committee which advises the Inter-Ministerial Committee, and the Commissioner. That there's not violation of human rights and the Constitution. Then the section 31, designation, determine, appointment, prescription, withdrawal, or cancellation of course of entry. The Department of Justice says basically that the heading needs to change because it all relates to withdrawal and not. So withdrawing the designation, withdrawing the determination, withdrawing the appointment rather than designation, determination, appointment, prescription, withdrawal. So the heading should either be withdrawal of the designation, determination, appointment, prescription, of course, of entry. So it's just a matter of wording there. This also is similar to the way it's stated in the Immigration Act. 27, South Africa, which is a representative of fruit suppliers, but specifically make mention of import and export of fruit. the insight that there are three separate committees established in terms of in terms of 26, 25, 26, and 27, that I only have state officials on them, and I indicate that Code 27 provides the Ministry of Health Advisory Committee to advise on water management issues and the functional authority. So they're worried that that the Minister is not obliged to consult non-state parties. Food South Africa believes that it's important that industry bodies such as Food South Africa and others to be allowed to provide input and regulations that might impact on water efficiency. Then moving on to the last of that page, clause 28, implementation of protocols. Business Unity South Africa say that other organs of state may continue to undertake duplicate inspections once cargo has been moved from the border law enforcement area. As I mentioned, train stations before or train stations after, and this might inhibit the free flow of trade. Therefore, they suggest inserting the following provision as clause 25. Establishing systems, forms, procedures, and protocols to ensure that each organ of state does not duplicate the extension of the execution of functions carried out by any other organ of state in respect of the person affected by the act. So they're basically just trying to make sure that the prevention of duplication is formalized. So then we move on to the next page, which is in a slightly different format, so we can fit all on the same page. But this is also from Business Unit South Africa. Basically, they're saying when any kind of negative decision of the BMA is come to, that there needs to be written reasons provided for why those decisions were taken, and that these written reasons need to include the following: the constitution, the public interest, the power of the authority. Procedural fairness, real evidence, and that any decision of the commission and the reasons must be made available to the affected party. And then secondly, appeals to the decisions of these negative decisions could be not only through courts but through other appeal bodies, in the form of consent orders. So this is a technical matter, this is how appeals are dealt with, and they give a specific indication of how disputes and appeals be inserted. I'm not going to go into the details of this is a very technical, specific intervention. Basically, they just worry that they don't want to make it too easy for the BMA to disrupt business. And they want to make sure that they follow the procedure and that the corruption doesn't start rising because it's too easy to not... basically it's been paper articles, and having lots of requirements before preventing or having a difficult administrative decision against trade. Then moving on to clause 31 on the next page. The designation determines appointment, prescription, withdrawal, or cancellation of force from entry. The Business Unity South Africa indicates that this is in contrast to the specifications for ports, points, ports, and places of entry. Now, this is an administrative law matter, which I think the Parliamentary Legal Services will advise us on. I'm not 100% sure how this applies, but basically they're saying that if you have the power to establish a port, you automatically have the power to take away. So this, they just make sure that there's no contradiction between the two. And that there needs to be alignment between the two clauses, the one on establishing ports and the one on withdrawal of ports. Moving on to D6, offenses and penalties. Department of Justice indicates there that the 1D, an officer may, it's an offence to resist or obstruct an official in the performance of his duties, whereas clause 15 refers to the duties, powers, and functions and powers of the officers. and clauses 18 to 21 also provide for certain powers of officers. I suggested that the word powers be included in the wording of that subclause, whereas at the moment only their functions. Then 36.4b, that is an offence for an officer to breach any of the prescribed disciplinary codes related to the border law enforcement officers. But they're saying that that this provision is obvious, that it's not necessary to mention it, and that's too vague. And also, what would happen if the disciplinary code was amended, changed from time to time, and what the implications be there. Then in terms of 36.5, there's all about the different kinds of penalties. And 36.5 provides for a sentence or fine or imprisonment not exceeding 10 years. And subclause 4 makes it's an offence for an official because of being clause 34 regarding confidential information. Basically, all of these together are saying that the breach of the disciplinary code related to border law enforcement functions of an officer are too vague, and that the 36.5 provides for penalty for this offence but does not specify the period of imprisonment of the person who is convicted. And this could allow for courts to have a very broad application for what kind of offences, what kind of penalties are given for offences. So that needs to be either removed or specified, as was done in those cities for other offences. But I'm sure the legal people will understand that, and if not, they can look at the original submission or get hold of them, because that's my understanding of it. But this one relates to the regulations for this Act. Justice indicates that the Minister, after consultation with the Minister, made the regulations. But there's a difference between after consultation and in consultation. And they suggest, I think they're suggesting that in consultation would be better, because after means that they consider it, but they're not obliged to it, whereas in consultation means they both agree on it. 37.4 provides the Minister may make regulations that prescribe different penalties for different degrees of misconduct, but it's uncertain if this is the same code of conduct referred to in the previous clause. Then that needs to be specified. It's supposed to assume that it was possible that was given. They want to know if there's consideration given to the possible consequential amendments or repeal of other existing laws once the bill comes into place. One thing they mentioned, for instance, the Cross-Border Road Transport Act, which in Part 8 contains law enforcement provisions which would overlap with the provisions of the bill. So, just need to consider how it's going to impact on other legislation once it's implemented. 37 relates to the Code of Conduct. The private individual, Mr. Mukhase, indicated that the tightening of the code of conduct or ethical standards for BNA officers is needed to avoid the issue of bribes and other corrupt behavior. This also relates to the Scalabrini submission on the limitations of duties. Then the transfer of employees from the organ of state authority, this is from Business Unity South Africa. They're making several points on this matter. They say that paradoxical for the agency to be set up as basically a vertical structure. They say there's a problem with the current vertical structure, so the different departments at the same level are not working together. So it's paradoxical to try and change things that are not working in this direction to something that's like this that also might not work. So the changing the orientation of the coordination is not necessarily going to solve the problem. And that caused problems because the line officials will be disconnected from their former mother departments and could separate their accounts, could cause problems with accountability. They said it's better to have MOUs or more strict service level agreements or even the interministerial committee as it is in place present rather than a change for the new entity. They're saying that separation between policy formulation and enforcement is a problem, that the review of functions the review of the functions to be transferred so that the functions that may currently be delegated to frontline staff of member departments does not remove responsibility of the position from the senior official who remains in the principal department. So again, that was an issue about that. Do you transfer manager over? And so you have a line of officials there, but what happens to their previous managers and what happens to their concurrent functions? The only way for the functions to be transferred from the minister currently is through a presidential proclamation. But the problem was with the proclamation because such a matter doesn't pass to med like all parliament. Nor does it require consultation or prior publication. So they're worried that the transfer functions might not be in everybody's best interest. So it's a bit a question of how functions are transferred from one department to another. The chief law advisor, Bruce indicates, is of the view that the principal legislation may not be required as the relevant powers will be undertaken concurrently, amendment of the principal legislation. However, there are reservations at accuracy of this because the complexity of the legislation. And they're quite worried about the concurrent functions, that if you have several departments performing similar functions, that this can actually reduce efficiency, and that they have experience of this happening in other areas. So they're quite worried about the overlapping legislation, overlapping functions. They also indicate that many of the powers transferred relate to specific laws upon the highest administrative authority within line departments, which he then can delegate to his subordinates. But by transferring some of these functions to BMA as a whole, the administrative authority of the head of the organization that were at before will not be able to exercise the same oversight as they did before. So it's just a question of how with the head of the line of accountability, how that will change their responsibilities. Then we move on to the next page. These are the more general submissions. The first of which there is from that private individual, Ms. Makase. Basically agreeing there that staff at NDF and SARS customs should transfer to BMA and that they should be allowed to carry guns and make arrests in the interest of security. Then civil resources, again this border community individual or family or business, that they say that more consideration needs to be given to border communities for training programs for young people, for recruitment preferences as immigration officers and personnel. So they just want the border communities to consider as for appointment. And they said that their grandparents witnessed directly the very difficulties of the colonial fences being set up between Botswana and South Africa, and that the families have been separated. So they're saying that too much consideration was given to these colonial fences to disadvantage the economic opportunities for these border communities to conduct cross-border trade specifically. Or perhaps special arrangements for the border communities. Then the Scalabrini Center are concerned that the Green Paper on Migration, the broad policy of migration in the country hasn't been finalized until that paper, and that this should in fact precede the legislation which deals with a lot of the same matters. So usually policy should precede legislation. So they suggest that the bill actually be withdrawn until there's further clarity on the roles of government and agreement of these roles once the white paper is finalized. That's so that everybody's on the same page. Then Scalabrini Center and Business Unity South Africa had a very similar submission here, which basically relates to the schedule, the last part of the bill relating to the memorandum of the bill relating to the expense for the border management agency. They say it's unclear how the 3.8 billion rand cost for this agency was come to, and that it probably failed to consider the overlapping costs due to the overlapping functions that will continue to carry on once the BMA is established. So there will be a duplication, which will also cost extra. Then positive and negative effects on revenue collection, as this relates to their concerns about the transference of our customs functions. and as this will also have a negative impact on investor uncertainty, and perhaps negative perception of the country. Funds will follow the 5.2 in the memorandum indicates that funds will follow functions, and it envisions that additional funds may be required for the establishment of authorities. But no further details provided on what these funds might be, where exactly they would be spent, or where the funds would come from. It's particularly concerned given the recent challenges around government funding and expenditure. The cost estimate also appears to not factor in the initial cost of change in management that will come from the creation of the new agency. They then give the example of the Department of Homeland Security in the USA, which had 22 existing government departments put together into a mammoth bureaucracy that oversees a really very complicated bureaucracy, and that there's some opinion in the US that tens of billions of dollars are disappearing annually into the Department of Homeland Security. Since it can't seem to get its audits in order because it has such a large organization with so many functions. And also given that the DHA really has trouble with its audits, they're worried that an even bigger organization with even bigger bureaucracy will also struggle with auditing or finances and accountability. Given Chamber of Commerce, then also kind of questioning the international best practice. So there's only one country that they're aware of that that has an integrated border agency, and that's Canada. Other places like United Kingdom established one in 2008 and then abolished it because it wasn't performing properly. And also it's become quite close, secretive and defensive in culture. And they indicate that because it hasn't succeeded internationally, why should we consider it here? Would it be detrimental to business combining the complexities of customs cargo control with that of immigration? And would that impact negatively on freight supply chains? So this is the broader concern, I think, which was raised by SARS in our previous meeting, that the dealing with large freight at airports and harbors can be quite different from the land borders, and that how those customs are dealt with and how that would affect business. They indicate that revenue collection at borders by SARS is very critical, and the detailed functions, the complex function with, by far, there's a range of complex electronic interventions, including, there's a list of them. And then the department, the Durban Chamber of Commerce also indicate that integrated and coordinated border management that facilitates secure and legitimate trade, that this is a critical function of the economy and for economic growth, but it's very important not to fragment the current existing tax system. SARS functions extend beyond revenue collection and cover other functions such as control of goods and ports of entry, regulations, rulings, keeping good records, audits and investigations, dispute settlements, internal investigations and functions performed by the tax ombuds. Therefore, they argue that the DMA should not replace the revenue collection infrastructure. They also indicate that the fragmentation of the tax system could lead to a lack of clarity between SARS and the DMA on which entity should get what taxes. There would be a compromise that will compromise certainty that taxpayers require to the question of in terms of which entity is responsible. Could result in tax not being collected or some tax payments not being duplicated. The integrity of the tax system could be brought into question. Could introduce personnel that are not equipped to deal with revenue matters. I think some of these issues dealt with by the minister this morning, but still concerns from Bruce and from the Durban Chamber of Commerce. So the sixth point on the top of the next page. Are both a concern for Durban Chamber of Commerce and Busa, that SARS's very credible employment and training of 2,500 customs personnel, and that they are involved in the implementation of policies. If the DMA seeks to observe this staff and they prefer to remain with SARS, being able to be deprived of these key skills, and this will in turn disrupt the revenue vision. There are then just indicate that most recently Fars's preferences connected 100 million rand at Robert Tambo that would otherwise have evaded the tax man. The findings of sessions of SARS to BMA, they indicate it's not strictly necessary for the key objectives of all, such as providing for the establishment organization, regulation, and control of the BMA. Also, the transfer, assignment, and designation of law enforcement border related functions to the BMA don't strictly require these customs responsibilities. So they argue it's not strictly necessary. Then, should SARS not have capacity to serve the points of entry, it would be more feasible to improve their infrastructure as opposed to fragmenting the tax collection system. It's important that the tax administration remain with the Commission SARS. Its transfer may conflict with the Constitution of South Africa and be contrary to the Tax Administration Act. The value of SARS customs is close to like 177 billion in 2014, which is about 20% of the total revenue collected. And there was a mention of the Davis Tax Commission in respect that the transfer of SARS function to the BMA would put a significant contribution to the fiscus in a position of uncertainty if the BMA were implemented, and it is fiscally imprudent at this juncture for the South African economy. So that's they're referencing the Davis Tax Commission. This was also mentioned by the Business Unity South Africa. Business Unity South Africa then continued that the socio-economic impact assessment model or study that was conducted through GTEC by Home Affairs determined that it would be substantially more expensive for the BMA to be implemented than capacitating the SANDF to perform the same functions. They mentioned there that the difference between 15 to 24 billion rand for the BMA versus only 2.5 billion rand for the SANDF to perform the same function. In the current constrained fiscal environment, with the prospect of an imminent sovereign debt rating downgrade, the fiscal space for the establishment of the BMA is not available today. This assessment, socio-economic impact assessment, recommended against proceeding because of the high risk and high cost associated with the wholesale transfer function. Lucia also supported the recommendations made by that impact assessment, that the BMA should rather be set up as a coordinating agency without transferring the functions from the relevant line departments. They said that no adequate reason was provided by the DHA why this recommendation for the study, in the study that they commissioned was discarded in favor of an implementing agency rather than a coordinating agency. And they agree that it would be a high-risk venture initiated now. Next one is both BUSA and the Tourism Board Council, Tourism Business Council, indicate that, as indicated in the preamble, that the bill doesn't actually seek to promote legitimate trade or assist in facilitating legitimate migration of people. In this regard, they are concerned that there might be a militarization of the border environment and at the expense of tourism and business. Then moving on to Business Unity South Africa, the risk of a negative impact on the legitimate trade, particularly given that the process of the implementation of the new Customs Act has only just begun. And then they agree with the Food South Africa relating to agricultural inspection, specifically of the certification of food for export. That this is a very technical function that should remain under the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And as a result, the requirements of inspection concerning this must be adhered to and are performed by the department only inspectors. That's relating to food inspection. Then food contact is going specifically to how many jobs are created by in the food industry, and also creating significant international foreign currency for the country. Basically arguing that this particular implementing body, the Perishable Products Export Control Board, has very technical responsibilities in terms of the transportation of food in cold supply, and that they serve food to Africa, and that their activities do not fall under the ambit of the BMA, and that the board's interventions are quality control, not a border control, and that substantial proportion of the work of the board is conducted inland away from the port of entry. So they submit that the work undertaken by board officials is of a technical nature and requires specific knowledge, including food quality, etc., and it would be completely inappropriate and self-defeating to place this area of cold chain management and quality control under the BMA. Yes, so that's it. So, sorry for the rushed overview, and as far as I know, that's most of the merger submissions.
Sure.
thank you very much. I can tell that did not rush. You did not rush, and the Rafa was also patient because it looks like your session. It's very crucial for members to be able to digest the presentation that we have and to be able to talk to them. Honorable members, it looks like these other presentations that you just received from Arab will really require maybe some other 2 hours or so for us to talk to them and to move or eliminate some of the things, because some of them, they belong to regulations, some belong to certain pieces of legislation that the water management will be implementing, and it doesn't really belong to this one that establishes the entity. They actually talk to the policies to be implemented by the entity and the regulations. And I just wanted to make, given the time that we are having now, to make a proposal. Because tomorrow I think we set aside to still meet. Whether we can come and engage Adam's presentation tomorrow, then now we only attack COSAT and see whether it can survive. With this short time that we are having, maybe to engage them so that we can quickly get through the particular area of work. And then this one, because it needs time, we don't have really time to digest this. We need about 2 hours non-stop and speaking to each and everyone, then we can do it tomorrow. Is there any view on my counter-revolutionary proposal? Okay.
Okay, I'm satisfied with the proposal. But now, to just agree, I have a question for SAPS, or perhaps the DG can respond given he was engagement with SAPS. So, can we attack SAPS and Corrupt, if you don't mind?
Now, like you have informed that if you attack SAPS, then the nearest place of you will be in prison. So, you just watch out. I would love to ask if we could finish with COSAT. Then if there is time for that one question or two, then we can speak to SAPS a little bit later. So that we also have people that are worried about our ministry, so that then they don't get confused in the court. Can we do that? I don't think there are many matters of COSAT, because although the society sector told us that they have got the disagreement on 2.5 matters, but the issue that he raised, that is not 2.5, it looks something around 7 or whatever. And then probably was just putting our legs. And but it looks like some of the issues that they had, based on the original draft, as they have already sorted out. And what now they are differing, it is just two issues. Others are just simply continuous perception.
that they don't believe in the things that the department is saying. See? But the issues that are differing are they are not many. And then we find that we only spend 15 minutes or so, and then we can find another 15 minutes to actually have your questions to SAS. As a department, we are going to have a clear engagement with them next week when they are actually responding to all of this. Our discussions tomorrow will also be prepared to come and hear how the department responds. And if we think there is a better way from our engagement tomorrow, then we advise them next week how we see things as we have engaged. Is that okay?
I'm fine with it. I'll just pretend this test might not be that clear. If you just...
Now today, when you finish your contract for us, then you put that question to SAPS. And then I'll be in agreement. Thank you very much. And then that's why Adam can be released from that seat if you want to. Then we're not going to make you run today. And then, consultant. And then it should be ready. Can we then speak to consult this presentation? And then, honorable members, honorable Shope, you started this time around, and honorable Singh, then honorable Sana. That is about 3 minutes, but remember that I've got a right just simply to point any member whether he or she has got any issue with Kotaji, then just declare, no, I've got nothing, it's fine. Then I'll pass.
Well, sure, after I have spoke, Kushkana will be covered.
I know that is
No, sir, I also want to tell you, please, just in a point of procedure, are we engaging Kotaji on the basis of clarity, or are we engaging with the discussion? Okay, my observation with Kotaji, just to zoom in on the presenter, is that he's so apologetic. He has forgotten that he is representing workers, a class ideology. He keeps saying comrade, man, who's a comrade, Kitaba. I think he's going to be very vibrant as a Kotaji person. So now, my question is that if you have engaged your comrade outside this committee, what do you want from us? Because it looks like you have your platform with your comrade there. That's right. And I don't know why you're so apologetic, because the issue that you are raising there, Mina, I concur with it. Only me I know in this committee. But I concur with the issue that you are raising there. But the way you are so apologetic, I don't think I'm not going with you and being in your side. But you can nevertheless share. I just want to get a clarity, because as you pointed out from the beginning, that it looks like it's only two issues. That banning of outsourcing, which is very important with me here. And better of agreement, I think they have gone a long way and they have agreed, but it's subjected to be clarified as well. And the technical functions and cleaning staff and other functions. So now, I just want to get a clarity duty. Am I correctly understanding that you are only have those two issues that are outstanding with the department? All those issues that you have listed above, and that area of procurement, electrification, etc., etc. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable
Hussein.
Chair, I just have two questions of clarity. The first one relates to the estimate of 10,000 staff. I'm not sure where Kosatu is getting that from. So if you could just maybe just give an indication. I haven't heard about the estimates from the department or anywhere else. So I'll just come up with that 10,000 figure. I gather it's probably an estimate, but I'll just give it to that. And then the second question is, you expressed some concern about establishing a separate agency or authority, which then really just creates the opportunity for somebody to get a higher salary. You made some comments in that regard. You didn't refer to how you were able to settle that concern. That's the only two I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, JJ.
Oh, thanks, sir. I don't know what Honorable Self has addressed, what is in my mind, but I will try to address them, but I left. The petition, I understand that Conferdo is agreeing with Jesus Christ and ticketing and so on. But I want to urge Conferdo to engage more with the department so that when we take a final resolution on this case, might not taken by surprise when we implement it. But issues of public safety, sometimes they have the potential of causing some tensions. But I think that the port of entries and well cannot compromise the security of our country. Really must engage until they understand each other. Second, it's the issue of exemplification. I should think this deal is coming at the time where it's going to assist us at the point of entry. Because we must have an agency that will bring us to bear, unlike the manner in which we are operating in the cross borders. To me, really, I want to persuade COSATU to understand this. Why should we have this DMA? Because it will assist us all of us in terms of bringing all the departments together and having that management. Because every spur of time, we don't have the proper management to those departments, their line functioning, everybody's having his own mandate and so on. I agree with the department to bring this forward so that we can continue. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, please, Raput.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Pasatu fighting for the rights of the workers, and I think really issues that you have raised that are very, very important and are very critical, the right of the workers. And also I'm also concerned about in this GA, the person that is going to be employed, to whom is this person going to report to? Is this going to report to? Because you can see that, you know, there are a lot of matters here. It's holidays, it's staff, it's all around. And maybe the person to those many persons that are going to cause such a confusion. And let's just get how I think the gun of them. What is this person's function is going to be? Even the issue of the certification agency. I'm a little bit skeptical about this. Very, very, very skeptical. Then I think there the DG will also try to, if he can be able to clarify about this issue. But the right to strike, I think those are the things as some of others workers, because I think everyone is salaried is a worker. Despite of that we have taken on that and that, then we have to be rigorous on that, I think.
Thank you very much. And Smith, are you ready? Tadjan Pumba.
Yes, I respect the rights of workers. Perhaps they have fought for them for a long time. However, I think it is more important to respect the interests of the country. We still respect for that, and I've said this before. If you can imagine a scenario where there is a problem with workers, with the employer, which is this organ, and people are not working, and nobody knows the border, and they've got a right to strike. There are so many other things that I think their rights need to be limited, like the soldiers, like medical people and so on. And that
that part of it should be accepted as such. And I think that you need to consider very seriously whether it should not arise, or whether it should not the right of the interest of the nation should not take priority to the right of the worker in this case. That's all I want to say.
Thank you very much for that
question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is a difference between the water management agency and the water management authority. The one which this agency is to follow is more in terms of the authority, where it has a control, a coordinating function rather than an agency function, if I might put it that way. But having said that, an agency does not in all terms, at least not in legal terms, require or imply privatization. It can also mean that you're acting as an agent on behalf of someone else, and privatization within government circles doesn't come up. But can I just understand from you, I understand that your objection against the border management agencies on the fact that it may be exposed to privatization, which you are opposed. Do you understand it correctly? Is something else I don't understand? Thank you.
Okay, that is good.
No, thank you very much, Sebastian. I think I don't have a problem with the question of outsourcing or no outsourcing. And in the interest of worker security. And most of the areas that have been raised are issues that are there in the Constitution, like the right to strike and the way it has to be managed. I think that is between COSATU and bargaining council of public service bargaining council. The issue of whistleblowing, I think we've got to clarify better whether there has been agreement, because it is part of our laws. And then, but on the other side, there could be whistleblowing that affects what is covert information gathered by covert measures. So perhaps if we could understand each other around that. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'll request the Honorable Hussein to ask that question of the police so that they can answer it right at the end.
Sir, thank you. Just a single question now. I just wanted to understand where SAPS is sitting with this whole BMA bill at the moment. Because the last time, when they submitted, and I wasn't at that meeting, but from the minutes is what I picked up, that the SAPS has put on the table three scenarios, from what I picked up. And just for the benefit of the gentlemen who are here, they suggested that the first scenario was where such members at the Port of NG are part of the BMA structure and cease to be members of SAS. That was the first scenario. The second scenario was that they were seconded to BMA. And the third scenario was that SAS remained outside of the BMA structure but work alongside the BMA officers. I'm just catching that because in this document that we looked at now, their responses, where they've managed to settle a number of issues, the part I'm not understanding is where exactly is the settlement that you signed. It doesn't come out clear to me that it's in one of those scenarios unless you came up with a different one. Or is it scenario C that is going to work with BMA as a separate structure? I don't know whether the gentleman will be able to respond to it. Perhaps maybe the DG, since he was at that level, the commissioner. So I'm quite satisfied if any one of them respond to it. Thank you.
Okay. thank you very much. And with the DG of Home Affairs, I think it will be very important that you assist us, especially in relation to any possible legislation that may require to be repealed in order to actually effect this BMA. If there is any, because that will then assist us to even know
the kind of department that we may have need to consult or to seek input from them in relation to those specific. There may be specific legislation that may require to be repealed, or certain sections that may require to be repealed in order to make way for this one to be implemented and effective. If we could be assisted from your legal services, then next week, yeah, not now, it's next week, and then when you come to report it, you give us that particular picture, if there is any of those that may be affected. Because you can't run past the two parallel pieces of legislation that gives different people to do exactly the same thing from two different corners. Then one has to give way for one to be able to be effective. And given the scenario that we have, and then the main possibility for certain sections to be repealed, and in which piece of legislation are we speaking about, and what is the inputs and the comments of the relevant department that implement that piece of legislation, then it will be required for us moving forward.
Alright, well, thanks very much, sir. And also just to acknowledge the members, I've been joined by my colleagues in Nauru, Comrade Tenga Pangola, who was delayed by the plane. But I'll just have to run through issues quickly, Comrade Sir. Well, I think let me start with your success. You earlier mentioned the issue of border borders, local threats. And yeah, to make a certain suit, we 100% agree. In fact, that only supports government having one single government organ to manage the borders, to deal with the issue of goods flooding in, migration management, etc., in a progressive and periodic way. In fact, during our engagements, we had like, we actually even support governments and even to be tougher around the issue of searches and seizures. I think if you enter the borders, the bureau staff has had the full right to search anybody, just like when you go to the airport. Actually, even reason, you can't just grasp over it. Shaken by the hooligan, but we should not cover that kind of. One of them coming to be very active is enforcing laws. I mean, we should tell more about the vehicle. So, to summarize, it's really about the issue with the agency, not a public service department, and of course, we have almost all to be bought in just to ban outsourcing completely, not just the immediate security issues. And of course, we want to be for government to address the issue amongst itself, ranges of customs. Look, I'm not sure the issue of being apologetic. I mean, look, our approach to the society that we must also come with content. Yeah, so, look, actually, we can come with service or we can come with content. So we wanted to come to engage with government here and at NetLife and Galatas with content. Yes, committee, that is our comment. We're not apologetic about that. It's not being allowed. And it's a long issue, but I don't go to the public chair. We're getting up in the committee, so... Getting up in the committee, so it's a very good issue around the issue of the agency, and of course, outsourcing. We're glad that they're on the board of the briefing us around the issue of outsourcing and the agency. In terms of under the same, if we could be closer than the 10,000 public service estimate, I think I'd always be the best place to get the exact figure. Whenever the coverage of the figures from 7,000, 8,000, we run it up to about 10,000, but for about 60% of departments to work with. But of course, in the end of the day, that pretty much fluctuates depending upon engagements, etc. Our issue around the agency and the governing issue is that, as we've said, it's a magic word, if you pay a CEO a very high salary, as if DGC had a poverty wage, they will perform miracles. But then, as we already had a chap called Andrew Cronin about 10 years ago, we paid about 20 million rent. After a few months, we had to go. We've got Telcom, which has got 50,000 employees for about 6,000 today. There's constantly attention to staff and outsourcing. We have Eskom, which has been well over the past year, but still now seems to be confused around the IPP issue and renewable energy. So we can pay a high salary to CEO, doesn't mean we're going to get a good results. But as we say, we've got a public service bargaining council, which also covers all public servants. I think if teachers are happy with the wages, they're welcome to join now and to come mobilize the authority to see for better wages. And most things that's going to say, to give these short spread, I think JJ, Kaputi, Kumede, and Pumbana have mentioned it. The short spread, speakers need to be developed as a member of the department. In the first bill, there was a blanket ban, which I didn't go to the department, so not just to bring up between the admin staff, the cleaning staff, for example, without stamping a passport. those with armed security staff remain physically the borderline. So there's this distinction between the agree to that. That's just that there's an existing Labor Relations Act which provides for essential services determination. Don't collapse that law. Don't treat moderate to the essential services commission that the border security, the armed security officers, the commissioned officers, they must then be a minimum service level agreement with them during the issue of search, purchase, and so on. Just like you've got with the police service, with correctional services, with the defense force, with the food security agency. So, for example, two steps, some administrative steps can go in for industrial action. But the staff of the minimum level service agreement, they can't. Because obviously, you don't have a situation of anarchy, etc., etc. Same thing with hospitals, because the issues are light and dead. So, it's not only just pass on issue of strike and personal result that to our satisfaction with the department, and we're quite pleased with that engagement too. Yeah, look, I think some of the other questions kind of overlap to the issue. I think so, look, the thing that we agree that's part of politically, any one government body, our issue is the vehicle. Whether it be a public service, a public vehicle, just like staff standards, correctional services, security, all with a great conversation, public service vehicles. Our problems haven't been an agency, and yes, I mean, what's concerned is that right at the agency, you affect backing functions. You'll find that like the and other agencies, there's a call center which is outsourced. Other police functions are outsourced all the time. You find a hollowing out of the face. So rather than the CRM, because it's using it first, you see that this is a hollow face, every other department is going to jump over to do the same approach. I hope that also answers Honorable Smith's question. I think the last question too was from Honorable Gumede. This is with the whistleblowing. Again, we find ourselves in the department there. We were worried about unattended questions quite from the beginning. That is in the how a member wants to expose corruption at Lady Bank Border Post is in the how organizer. We had a DNA Saturday, that's where we get into trouble. So that is the goal of the department of Bestie. As long as it doesn't conflict with the Protective Disclosures Act, but also the Protection of Personal Information Act, and even Protection of State Information Act. So if I'm just be right of those existing laws, then we're fine. So we managed to regather the surplus with the department, we're quite happy on that regard. So basically, the conclusion so really is all issues are around the vehicle, at the department of an agency, and of course, the legacy government being very bold in banning assaulting in its entirety, though we do appreciate banning it for security functions. Yeah. I'm not sure if Colonel Tengo wants to jump in, but I think...
Now, if you are accommodated, that is fine. I think we thanks for your cooperation in saving a little bit of time for us. And can we then ask the staffs on that particular matter that has been raised, for those it may have impact on the legislation, but I thought that it may be a matter of after we have resolved that we established the DMA, then now the internal arrangements, how we get staff and what, that will be the time that matter should arise from us. Because at the moment it's about the establishment of the thing, and then if we agree on that engagement of our staff and someone, but we may do different systems respond on those scenarios. Thanks.
Thank you, Jefferson. From the figures I say, we contacted with the Home Affairs TC, and we moved a step forward, and we decided to unpack the mandate of SEPS, the classical policing function, and separated it from border control function that is performed within the border control area. So, basically, we advanced classical policing, as TC has mentioned earlier, and the minister. Classical policing, which includes intelligence investigation, dealing with crime scenes and crime, handling exhibits, looking for suspects, and arresting suspects, presenting letters to court, shall remain the sole responsibility of CPS in all areas, including the border control area. And certain functions that relate to border control shall be determined as functions of DMA. that may include the access control to border control area, that may include the areas where the EPOs is assisting with the control of movement of goods and people, and also the deportation. There are areas where we escort deportees. Those are among the functions that are solely regarded as border control functions. But it is not the policing shall remain the function of RIPS. So RIPS is available, we consider that it is available even within the border control area in many of our borders. So and the people of South Africa public and also the traveling public shall be able to get assistance from RIPS whenever they need that assistance. So previously when we presented, we did mention that the three options that was presented were internal discussions within the fitness when we were looking at possibilities of how best can we assist in terms of facilitating the implementation of the product management agencies. But we were not limited, the problem was not limited to only three. So we took it further and we were all satisfied. I think the DG even made an example that should there be a person killed within the border control area. It cannot be BMA, it is still in the country, handling the food goods there, and presenting the opponent of having presenting to court, it shall be SAPS. So we moved in that spirit, where it was a common understanding that we, the response of the BMA, the police shall always be there. Like in the US, with the existence of Homeland Security, we still have the FBI, we still have the New York Police Department, and all these other entities. In England, you have the BA, you also have the Scotland Yard, and security branch. So, in all cases, you may have, you may not diminish the responsibility of police in order to create an agency. So that was the general answer that I was in. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, well, thank you very much. But in any way, that discussion, I think it is an ongoing discussion, because that will only be completed by the actual establishment of the BMA. And of course, that I'm sure we all agree that there is no one square meter area in South Africa where you can ban police and say then they can't be there. Anywhere where there is any legal activity or a criminal activity, police then are allowed to actually go in there. But by the end of the day, honorable member, is that South Africans are worried about the security of our borders because it brings all sorts of socio-economic challenges in the country and also some related criminal activities. I'm sure honorable members may have heard that there are a couple of foreigners in Pretoria that have been arrested for human trafficking. That's a few days back or a day back. And then, so, this issue of our borders being porous brings all sorts of problems, political instability may be expected in no time because we do have security issues that arises because of the porous borders. And all of us to enjoy the freedom that are having, there is a need to ensure the security of the state so that all of us are protected, then we enjoy our rights. Whether it is rights or services from the employed workers, that right should also be protected in terms of security. Because otherwise, if there is a political instability, all people may actually do their rights as workers because the factory that you are working in may be up in flames. And then because of either foreign sabotage and then the poor people are no longer with. So you have put all those things. There is a balancing act that is required. And remember that Home Affairs has now been put under the security class, which means that anybody that works in Home Affairs also has a responsibility to uphold and advance the security interests of the country. No longer just working there. Like any other official who just worried to wake up in the morning and get the office and go back home. But all Home Affairs officials now, the job that they are doing
they should always have consciousness on security, on what they are doing. Whether they need a person to come in the country, then is there any security risk? We expect that now they must, their consciousness must rise to the occasion as part of the security plan. And hence, there will be give and take. There will be give and take to balance. And then I think that is what it is expected of us, that we must improve the security of our borders in order to ensure that our citizens are protected. Therefore, we have got the responsibility to ensure that after listening to all, then we try and arrive to that. We are aware, honorable members, that Home Affairs is still going to continue with Treasury. Hopefully, in the next 7 days, they would have actually tried to get some consensus on the matters that are outstanding. And then Home Affairs, I think, is still going to see to police about point 231 and 232, just to clarify it more. And then also, of course, COSATU, if there is still a point that you think it is still, you can still persuade Home Affairs. But I mean, the negotiations and consultation must also come to an end at a certain time and agree to disagree if it is possible. Can't negotiate forever, because then we have got no certainty on the timing of the work that we are doing. But I mean, we have been told by the Minister of Home Affairs that the doors of Home Affairs are open, which means that we need to still believe that there is something that can be done. There is nothing that stops you this tonight to visit Home Affairs and have an engagement where it's about to look nice. As long as it achieves something, it should be appreciated. And also that tomorrow then we are coming, honorable members, we must go and process this together with the main presentations that we have. I think I will send you this, assist you to go through that so that tomorrow at least we engage on it and make sure that we know our positions as members of different political parties. So that after Home Affairs has responded to them next week, we are going to talk to ourselves again and actually try and have the final picture of the deal that we want to see going through. And then Home Affairs has said that it will respond next week Tuesday. And on that score, honorable members, tomorrow we expect to meet at D227 at 9:30. And I hope that if we have prepared ourselves properly, we should be able to conclude that in 2 hours. But it will depend, you know, on our level of preparedness and where we just repeat one and the same thing endlessly and find ourselves speaking for 4 hours. And so we will meet there tomorrow. And this brings us to the end of the meeting. Thanks to the members that are coming from the other portfolio committee. And then your continued support, I think, is welcome. To you tomorrow, we will welcome so that you're here and then you come and contribute again. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.